This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone. Boy, much to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Good afternoon. Welcome to One Bills Drive on a beautiful day in Orchard Park. Welcome to the John Murphy Show with Donald Jones, live here for the next 3 hours to talk some Bills football with you. Happy to have you in the audience today on what we call Jean Pant Friday.
Right? Is that what this is?
That's what our producer, Jay Harris, named it years ago, Jean Pant Friday. Mm-hmm. You got jeans on. I got jeans on. They're under the desk.
That's kind of like a nationwide thing, though.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Get out.
Even in schools, teachers, they wear jeans on Friday.
Oh, yeah, I know. But did they call it Jean Pant Friday?
I don't know.
That's the
weird. It's more like Casual Friday, right?
Casual Friday. I get that. Jean Pant Friday, that was Jay Harris. And I that was his invention. I'm guessing that, from what I can tell, everybody in the control room, our staff of thousands, has jean pants on today, right?
Yeah. You know, Jay has that influence on a lot of people around the building.
He issued the directive, and we followed. So welcome to Jean Pant Friday here, which normally Donald doesn't even wear slacks underneath the desk here. So this is an upgrade for him.
Right. I come in basketball shorts. For those of you who don't know, I'm in basketball shorts and slides, you know, no socks on, no nothing. And I just have on a shirt up top.
Right. Which is fine. That's a TV thing to do. Welcome to the show. A lot of ground to cover. All of it leading up to the Bills and the Bucks coming up on Sunday. Going to be a beautiful day. I have a feeling, Donald, it's going to be a memorable day Sunday. I think the Bills are probably going to come out on top. No guarantees here. But if I were picking, I would pick the Bills. Secondly, I think their offense is going to awaken a little bit against this Tampa Bay defense. I just think with 73-degree temperatures, with sunshine, with a full – I was at the ticket office today – completely sold out. I mean,
really?
Every seat in the place is full because of the way the team's playing, because of the weather. Ohio State marching band, you know, one of the quality marching bands in the country, maybe not the best. But I just have a feeling we're in for a memorable Sunday here.
People in this building that have something to say about that.
Right. There's differences of opinion, but I don't, you know, worship at the altar of Ohio State marching band or anything Ohio State for that matter. And there are people in this building who do, but that's okay.
Yes,
you don't,
are.
Right? You're a Youngstown guy. Didn't you hate the guys down the road?
I couldn't stand it.
Right.
I couldn't stand it. And the guys that I went that played on my team, like, oh, I'm an Ohio State fan. Well, you know.
What about the Penguins?
Yeah, what about the Penguins, you know? But I get it. You know, it's people in Ohio. They love Ohio State basketball.
Exactly. At any rate, their marching band's coming here Sunday. Should put on a great show. I just have the feeling we're lined up here coming off the bye. We're lined up here for a really good – I just think it's going to be a memorable game. And you know, I get excited about every game, but I'm especially excited about this Sunday's game.
Yeah, I think this team needs to get some momentum back. They need to get their running game going. So I'm excited to see if they can do all of that stuff. You know, I'm excited to see the weapons that Tampa Bay has. And I know, you know, fans will say, well, why do you want to see them? Well, I do want to see them. I like to see the superstars of other teams, you know, come in here and play. I like to watch other players in person. So I want to see Mike Evans. I want to see DeSean Jackson, O.J. Howard in person. You know, if Jameis is going to play, which – it sounds like he's going to play.
Sounds
I think
like
he's going to play. I want to see him play. You know, now I want the team to shut them down, but I want to see these guys play. So I'm excited.
And, yeah, it sounds like Winston's going to play. We probably get a post-practice report, and eventually today their participation, you know, questionable, probable, that'll come out eventually today. But it sounds like Winston's going to play.
I think
the
he's
Bills are
play.
Kind of gearing towards that. But that's part of what makes it, I think, an interesting matchup today. And how interesting is it, how weird is it that over the, 41 years history of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers franchise, this is just the second time that they played in Orchard Park.
And for me, that's another reason why I want to see them play, because we don't get to play them often. You know, and these teams that we don't get to play and see often, like the Falcons, like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you know, I like to – finally get a chance to actually see them in person and see them play. I think it's a good thing that you said it's the second time they've been up here.
All time, like 41
wow.
years. That's nuts.
That's crazy.
It's going to be a great day. I have a good feeling about it, the Bills and the Bucks. The game sponsor this week is ECMC. Go with the Bills. Go ECMC, the official healthcare provider of the Bills. ECMC proud to be the sponsor of this Sunday's game against Tampa Bay. All right, we're proud to put this show on for you today. We think it's going to be a good one. We're going to talk a lot about the game. We're going to enlist your help as well to get your thoughts on the Bills and the Bucks and how that matchup might go. As always, phone lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550 2550 or on Twitter at John Murphy Show. The Bills are over at New Era Field as we speak, practicing as we speak. And the injury report, again, the final official injury report set to come out later today when we find out about the status of, for instance, Jordan Matthews. This morning, head coach Sean McDermott says he's going to wait and see if Matthews is ready. He's made it through a couple of days of catching the ball in practice. They want to find out, you know, I think they have a pretty good feeling about how his injured thumb has responded to a few days of practice. Could be a little bit different story on game day, and we'll see how many snaps he gets if he is ready to play, but they're going to wait and see. Cordy Glenn, no commitment yet from Sean McDermott on whether Glenn would be the starter in this game. They're over there practicing in the stadium right now, and we'll have the post-practice injury update as soon as it comes out. But a lot to talk about today. Mark Kelso is going to join us at 12:30 today. The color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, scheduled to be in studio with us to talk about the matchup. He's done a lot of breaking down of the matchup, obviously. At 1 o'clock, Greg Cosell, the executive producer of ESPN's NFL matchup. Greg Cosell always has interesting insight into not just the Bills, but games around the NFL, including, I'm sure he'll have a lot to say about that crazy, magnificent Thursday night game last night. Greg Cosell coming up at 1 o'clock. The Lowdown with Lorenzo Alexander coming up at 2 o'clock today. Lorenzo Alexander makes his weekly appearance, and he'll be in studio with us to give us his breakdown of the Bills and the Bucks. Coffee with the Coach coming up at 2:30. Chris Brown with
the coach, Coffee with the Coach.
Yeah, Coffee with the Coach, Chris, and Sean McDermott will be in. Will be on the air with us around 2:30 or so, and a lot of your phone calls. It's a full plate.
You talked about that game last night. That was a good game.
Oh man, what a game!
And I didn't, you know, I didn't get to see the entire game because I was calling the game here last night, the high school game.
Yeah.
But when I got home, I was tired and I wanted to go to sleep, but I could not go to sleep because, you know, you had two teams. A divisional game, and I turn it on, the score is close, and you could just see Oakland driving down the field. And then at the end of that thing, Derek Carr threw like four touchdown passes on one drive. It was crazy. He is good. Those receivers, Amari Cooper finally broke out this year because he and Crabtree have been having horrible seasons. Obviously, we're going to talk about the whole thing with Marshawn Lynch and what happened with him, but overall, it was just a good game to see.
Well, and I was in the same boat. You had the high school game, which I want to ask you about in a minute. I had a fundraiser to go to, got back around 9:30, turned on the game. Second half had just begun. I was of the same mindset, thinking, oh, I don't think I'm going to catch the end of this. I think I'll give it a few minutes.
He turned it on. You're like, oh.
Couldn't turn it off.
I got to watch this.
It was unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, those are two good teams, first of all, Oakland and Kansas City. And as you said, the Raiders got off to a slow start. Derek Carr got off to a slow start. But once he got it heated up, he was outstanding.
Yes.
What a gamer he is. He's one of my favorite players in the league, especially when it comes to young players in the league. Just great plays down the stretch for the Raiders. Good plays virtually all game long for the Chiefs, including a couple of lucky plays, that tip that went for a touchdown. They both are very talented offenses, Donald. I look at it, obviously many Bills fans looking at it through the lens of, well, how do the Bills match up against these guys? You know, the Raiders are here next week. The Bills are going to go to Kansas City at the end of November. I'm telling you what, those offenses are light years ahead of what the Bills have done so far this year.
That is tough. Those offenses can score. Now, I understand that the Bills have a very good defense, one of the top defenses in the NFL. But Derek Carr is good, and they have weapons all across the field, and he can get it to those weapons. We saw this same offense last year with the exception of Marshawn Lynch. So we know that they can score points. This defense will have to be on their P's and Q's to stop that offense, and this offense will need to put points on the board to beat that team. That's a good team. Derek Carr, for me, is probably the best young quarterback in the league. In my opinion, he is playing good. Like you said, he's a gamer. He started off slow, which quarterbacks do sometimes. But when the game was on the line, like I said, he threw like four touchdowns on one drive. He ended up throwing the pass to Jared Cook, which he caught at the one, was a great pass. Jared Cook made a very good play. But then he made some great throws, you know, after time expired. And it was like, oh, he got another penalty. And then he had to make another throw, and he did that. And then he got another penalty. And he just continued to battle and battle and battle until he threw that ball to Crabtree for a touchdown. But is it me, or did you think – I thought he missed that extra point.
You thought he missed it?
I thought he missed it. At first, I'm like, did he miss
it? Oh, when you first saw it. Yeah,
yeah, I'm like, did he miss that thing?
It was close. That guy was struggling. I don't even have his name. That guy was struggling most of the night, and his kicks were a little shaky.
Yeah, because they don't have Janikowski, right?
Right.
He's been out. Yeah, so – you know, I don't know who that kicker was, but on that extra point, I'm like, oh, He missed it. Mm-hmm. No, he made it. All right, cool.
The snap was a little high. I did notice that. Did you see the snap on the extra point? A little bit high, and the punter did a good job of bringing it in.
Down, yeah.
It was hooking, but it did get through.
He just got it right in.
You know, one thing about that game last night, and we will talk about it as the afternoon rolls along, there was a lot of pushing off going on.
Yes.
On the part of wide receivers. And,
yes.
And they got away with some of them, including on a touchdown play. And the final play. Yeah.
With Crabtree.
That was
a little bit of a push off. Yeah.
There were those plays. And I think for the most part, they got most of the calls right in those untimed down sequence at the end of the game. I thought they did a pretty good job officiating of getting the call right, making difficult calls, almost game-deciding calls, one after another after another. But even early in the game,
they were letting push-offs go. You know, it's crazy. This is why I say I would never want to play corner in this league, because as a corner, you can't even breathe on a wide receiver. And I play wide receiver. But I understand their beef right now, you know, because they can't touch wide receivers, but wide receivers push off all the time. They push off all the time. I made a living off of pushing off, you know. Now, there's a certain way that you're supposed to do it, but you will see throughout the course of a game, cornerbacks always complaining about pushing off. And for the most part, the receiver did push off. The ref just didn't call it.
The good ones, I can't recall you pushing off. I'm sure you did. But the really good ones know how to push off and not get the call.
And not get the call.
How are you with that?
You know, it's all about just using your elbow, you know, and you never extend your hand. So when you go into the top of your route, you usually push off. You lean in with your body and you come out with your elbow. And they shouldn't call that. When you extend your hands like Crabtree did and got the call, that's when they're going to call that. Yesterday,
he extended his hands and didn't get
– Right, exactly. You know, and it's always a judgment call by the refs, but that's when they're supposed to call it, when they see you extend your hands.
Who taught you that?
Chan.
Really?
Chan, yes.
Like individual instruction, Chan Gailey.
Yes. Chan came over to me one day in practice. This was my second year. We were in training camp. And Chan, you know, Chan wasn't a guy who yelled at you. And, I ran a route in one-on-ones, and Chan was, like, screaming across the field at me. And I'm like, what'd I do? Like, he's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And he's like, you're big, you're physical, you got to use your body. And then he started to explain what he wanted to see out of me. Yeah, he leaned into me and did all of that stuff. And then I started to do that. See, I never had a receiver coach.
Was the play, on this particular situation, was the play going to you? And
we were in one-on-ones.
Oh, it was one-on-one?
Yeah, it was one-on-one. So he could see me.
Good separation.
Right, exactly. And he was like, you're big and physical. You're not using your body out there. And so he came over and he was explaining it to me. And that was the first time I actually had someone actually break down coming out of the top of your route, because I never had a true wide receiver coach. And when I came here, it was all about just learning your plays. Yeah. Chan came over to me and started to break down being a wide receiver.
You know, I think many of us assume wrongly at times that by the time a guy gets to the NFL, all that technique stuff will be ingrained, that you'll know
it.
And maybe, don't take offense at this, maybe coming from a small school, you wouldn't have the sort of individual instruction.
It's the truth. When you come from a small school, like I said, I never had a wide receiver coach me. You know, all of my coaches, they played like something else, like corner or something like that, and they just didn't know how to teach the basics of actually running routes and being a wide receiver and being decisive or deceptive, all of that stuff. I never had that, and especially coming from a small school. And so I kind of had to teach myself everything. And when I got here, it's so different when you get to the pros and how you have to play. And if you don't have someone teaching you these things, and you don't have that training, I guess, in the off season as well, you won't learn it.
I always had the sense that Chan was a little bit underrated especially as an offensive teacher.
Chan is an offensive genius. He really is. Yeah. His offensive mind is crazy. It was just hard for him as a head coach and calling plays to do it at the same time, you know. But as an offensive coordinator, man, he would put some things together, and we'd be like, wow, like that is a good play right there. Yeah.
But even down to the technique level.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah, he was really underrated. And, you know, he was, I guess, a player's coach, and he would talk to you and break things down, you know. And it was cool to work with him, you know, because I remember the first time he came to me and he was like, hey, man, you know who Miles Austin is? He's from Jersey. And I'm like, yeah, I know who he is. And he was like, well, that's how you're going to make this team, the special teams. And then when I ended up making the team, then he started to break down, you know, playing wide receiver. When he would see me do things on film, after we watched the film, we would always get together with the quarterbacks, with Fitz and the rest of the quarterbacks, the tight ends, running backs, the entire offense, with the exception of the offensive line, and we go over different things. And Chan would come into our receivers room and break things down to me personally. It was cool.
Interesting. We're going to talk a little bit more about that game last night, where you welcome your comments, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Late-breaking news from Tampa, where Bucks head coach Dirk Cutter announced today that Jameis Winston will start against the Bills. So they went all this way, deep into Friday anyway, halfway into Friday. And as I think we both anticipated, it would be Jameis Winston. I know the Bills coaching staff was thinking that way. We don't know about his level of participation in practice today, but it will be Jameis Winston starting a quarterback for the game against Buffalo. What do you make of that?
You know, this is what I expected. You know, Jameis, he got hurt in the last game, but he never left the sideline. So I was expecting him to play. Now, there was always going to be some pain management stuff. He was probably going to get a shot on Sunday to make sure that he's feeling like Superman out there. He doesn't feel anything.
For a while.
For a while, until he takes some hits. And hopefully this defense can get to him and hit him often, you know, so that it starts to get sore and sore and sore, you know. And then maybe you'll see him come back out of the game. But I expected this. I did expect for him to play, and I want to see him play. I truly do.
Let's talk with you about the game, about Winston, about last night's game. Phone lines open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Mark Kelso coming up at the bottom of the hour. Call here about last night's game from Jake in Rochester. Jake, are you there? Go ahead. Welcome. You're on the air with us. Hello, Jake in Rochester. Jake in Rochester, are you there? Nope.
No Jake.
Let's get to this game on Sunday, the Bills and the Bucks, Donald, and let's get to our Twitter poll, and maybe Jake in Rochester or somebody wants to weigh in on this. The game on Sunday, what is the key to a Buffalo Bills victory on Sunday over the Bucks? That's our Twitter poll. You can phone us up. Let us know what you think. What's the key to a Bills win over the Bucks on Sunday? Right now, early going, 60% say getting the Bills' run game going is number one on their list. And this is tied in with the two. 18% say getting better play from the offensive line is the key. 15% say handling Tampa Bay's offensive weapons. 7% have something else in mind. Let us know what you think. What's the key to a Bills' victory over the Bucks? 803-0550, the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. I'm going to vote for better offensive line play because I think, number one, getting the run game going will follow that. But I do think, Donald, and whatever scheme they're playing, whether it's this year's wide zone blocking scheme with some elements of the power game mixed in, whatever they're playing, they got to play better. I think if they do that, I'm not going to tell you it'd be an easy victory for the Bills, but I do think that would be a key element of how they could beat this Tampa Bay team.
Yeah, I think I would go with better offensive line play because we always say it starts in the trenches, and you have to be able to block up front if you want to get the run game going. And I know a lot of people are saying get the run game going. Well, that starts off with the offensive line and making their blocks up front and consistently doing it. And everybody, all five, including the tight ends, so six, maybe even seven if you have two tight end sets in there, making their blocks together. The issue has been you will have an offensive line, you will have a couple of guys, let's just say you had four guys on the offensive line blocking, everybody's doing what they're supposed to do. You have one guy that does not do what he's supposed to do, and it breaks up the entire play. So you need everybody consistently to make their blocks and work together as an offensive line coming out of this bye week. I'm sure they had enough time to sit down and talk to each other, look at film, figure out what's been going wrong. They need to be consistent up front, everybody doing your job every single play. And if they can do that, this running game will get going.
And that, of course, goes a long way towards getting this thing going. But as you and I look at this game and maybe the keys that we have for this game, let's talk a little bit about that, Donald, as we move through the show. The keys for a Buffalo Bills victory, I think ground and pound, even though it harkens back to memories of the Rex Ryan era, I do think that this is a team that they should be able to run the ball against. The numbers would suggest that. The video I've watched should suggest that. They can run the ball against this Tampa Bay team and control the clock, which is not always, job one, but it certainly factors into it. And I think running the ball, controlling the line of scrimmage, which they have not done on a consistent basis, would be the first key for me for the Bills against Tampa Bay.
So my first key is controlling Gerald McCoy. I think Gerald McCoy is a beast. I do. I think now he only has two sacks so far this year, but I think he's a beast. He's so quick off the line of scrimmage, and you know, if you're not ready for him, and he'll be over top of Richie for a lot of the day. And if you're not ready for him, he will end up in the backfield a lot. And we talk about, you know, all five of your guys up front need to make sure that they're blocking together and working together. Well, he's the one guy that you have to make sure you get a body on a body. And sometimes you got to double team him, you know, because he is so, so quick. So first, my key is to handle Jared McCoy. Second, you got to keep an eye on O.J. Howard.
He hasn't done anything.
Well, he had the reason I say keep an eye on him is because they ran like a weird play, and he just came wide open in the past. I think
I'll keep
that was
an eye on
week.
Him, but I'll keep an eye on him as if to say, where have you been? what's the deal?
Nah,
you're a top 10 draft pick. What's the deal?
Don't sleep on him.
I'm not sleeping on him, but
that's when he will.
What makes you think he? I'm not, you know, this will come back to bite me, I'm sure. why is he a factor? He hasn't been a factor in any of their games so far.
He's talented, you know. And, yeah, they haven't gotten the ball to him, but they have weapons around him. They have weapons on the outside. So because they have weapons on the outside, it frees him up to be one-on-one. They have another tight end in Brait. If you have all four of those guys on the field, somebody's going to come open. Somebody's going to get a one-on-one. And can Jameis Winston exploit that? The reason O.J. Howard hasn't really done much of anything yet this year is because Jameis Winston hasn't been playing good, you know. But O.J. Howard is a talent out there, and so you have to keep an eye on him, or, you know, he can make plays. And when he catches the ball, he can take it all the way to the house. My last key to the game is someone step up in the passing game, so somewhat along the lines of you. And that is, for me, I think Nick O'Leary is going to have a good game. But I hope that Logan Thomas can have a good game. I hope Zay Jones can really get going as well, because he's going to be the number one wide receiver. You know, we'll see what happens with Jordan Matthews this week. But I think Zay Jones, it's time for him to step up in week six now. You know,
you
can't – I understand you're a rookie, but we're halfway into this thing now. So it's about that time for you to step up and make some plays. But I would like to see Logan Thomas make some plays as well.
I'd like to see Logan Thomas make plays, and – I'd like to walk out here and find a $100 bill on the sidewalk. You know what I mean? That would be – if Logan Thomas – if you're counting – look, I'm not denigrating Logan Thomas here, but if you're counting on Logan Thomas to get you out of this offensive slump, I think that's a reach.
It's not even
about – you
know what
I mean? I'd like to find a $100 bill outside too.
It's not about him getting you out of the offensive slump. You got to utilize him because you don't have Charles Clay. He's going to be on the field, you know, and so – and he's athletic. He can get down the field, and he can open things up. If you throw him the ball, he can open things up for a Zay Jones outside, you know. And so Logan Thomas, look, Nick O'Leary's not the guy who can get down the field. Nick O'Leary can run you hook routes.
I'm not sure about that.
I don't think he can get down the field. He can run you hook routes. He can run you the five and out. He might be able to get into a seam, but we're talking about an athletic tight end that can truly get down the field. That is Logan Thomas. It's not Nick O'Leary.
How about O'Leary and maybe one of the best plays of the season so far against Denver? The deep pass, you know, great catch.
The deep over?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good play.
He can do that.
He can definitely do that. But he's still not a true wide receiver threat tight end in there. Logan Thomas is that guy, you know. And so I think Nick O'Leary's going to get his target. I hope he's that guy. You know, we've seen him make plays here in the preseason. Now, do I think he's going to end up getting it? No, because Tyrod Taylor throws it to guys that he's used to throwing it to.
You know? Like I said, I hope he is too, Logan Thomas. And I hope I find a $100 bill on the sidewalk. You know,
I think Tyrod is going to throw it to Nick O'Leary.
Yeah.
He's going to throw it to Zay Jones. And he's going to throw it to LeSean McCoy.
Well, yeah, and this is my second key, is basically find some weapons. It kind of goes along with what you're saying as far as what the Bills, you know, someone step up. But I think it's more likely that Zay Jones would be one of the weapons. Jordan Matthews, I think. It looks like he's going to play. We'll get the practice update. I think out of that group, maybe it's Brandon Tate. You know, it's kind of like people asking about Deontay Thompson. Maybe he's the guy, but, you know, there's nothing to suggest that.
No, not coming in this week.
Kalen Clay. I mean, now you're taking a flyer on some guys.
Yeah.
More likely to me, it would be Zay Jones, Jordan Matthews, Nick O'Leary to be, the weapons that will help this passing game get out of the slump.
We'll see.
We'll see. My last thing, and we will see about this too, and I have full faith and confidence that this will happen, the Bills' home field advantage. And I love the fact that Sean McDermott, he started it 2 weeks ago on our show when he was on the show talking about defend our dirt. I think he spent a lot of time. We've heard players say it, Eric Wood and some others. You know, they have to capitalize on the great home field advantage that they get. It's a unique atmosphere here in Orchard Park. Yes, it has something to do with the pregame hijinks. I'm not talking about table jumpers, but the celebration that goes on in the parking lot beforehand, and the fact that people get pumped up for these games. And I've been around the league a couple of places, not just this year, a couple of years, and there are these brand new venues in the NFL where people just aren't into it like mm-hmm. they are here. You know how people always say Orchard Park, closest thing to a college atmosphere there is in the NFL. They're right. It is. And the Bills have to cash in on that. They have to, you know, make their home field advantage their advantage and use it to their advantage. And I think Sean McDermott is spot on emphasizing that to his players. I think, you know, what you're looking at there is probably get off to a fast start, make plays on defense, which gets the crowd riled up. You know, and that would keep the home crowd into it throughout the entire afternoon. They've got to do that this week, next week, three of the next 4 weeks, and I think that'll go along. They're 2-0 at home so far this year. You know, I'd like to see that kind of trend continue.
Yeah, I mean, you have to win your games at home. I don't expect them to get out to a fast start, though. I just don't. This team hasn't, because they haven't done that all year. Unless they truly get the running game going, I don't expect them to get out to a fast start. They don't play that type of football. You know, their defense is good. And their defense plays well. And they haven't lived on touchdowns to get out to fast starts yet. You know, like everything has been on field goals. So I don't expect them to get out to a fast start. I think it's going to be, you know, they might score early in the game, but I don't expect this offense to get out to a fast start.
I think they'd do themselves a huge favor by putting up 7-10 points would. First quarter.
They would do themselves a huge favor by doing that, because maybe at that point the Buccaneers would say, okay, we got to pass to get back into this thing. And it will allow for this defense to get to Jameis Winston. But they just haven't done that all year.
I know.
So I don't know. I think history kind of repeats itself. Hopefully they can get out of that type of slump and get out to a fast start against this Bucs defense. But because they haven't done it yet this year, it's hard for me to say they're going to do it this week.
All right, we'll find out. We're going to talk with Mark Kelso when we return, the color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, here to give us his keys, his thoughts on the Bills and the Bucs. And, of course, we'll take your phone calls, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Just getting rolling, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. It is Friday here at One Bills Drive. The Bills practice is over. We should get our post-practice updates shortly as far as who's in, who's out, who's questionable for the game. The word from Tampa is that Jameis Winston will be starting at quarterback for the Bucs on Sunday. Bills, Bucs, 1 o'clock. You can watch the game on Fox TV, but better than that, you can listen to the game on our flagship here in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550, and up and down the Bills Radio Network. It's a better look at the Bills, not because of me, but because of this guy, Mark Kelso, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, longtime safety for the Buffalo Bills, and in his, 15th year now in part of the Bills broadcast, Mark? Is that what you are?
I don't know. I think it's more like 12 or 13,
12
right?
or 13?
Yeah, yeah, somewhere.
You've got it down, though, by now.
Well, anyway, we try hard, that's for sure.
Why don't I get you right into this game, Mark, because I know you spent much of the week looking at video. What, in your mind, is the key to a Bills victory over the Bucs? We got a Twitter poll up on this, and 60% of the respondents so far say getting that Buffalo run game going is the number one key. 18% say better offensive line, which is kind of hand-in-hand. 15% say handling Tampa Bay's offensive weapons, and 7% have something else in mind. What do you have in mind? If you had to identify one key, don't go off and give me four or five here. One thing. I know how you work.
Yeah, but it's like making something in the kitchen. There's a lot of ingredients that goes into a victory. So you can't say we're going to stop their big offensive weapons,
but
we're not going to run the ball.
What is the essential ingredient to a Buffalo Bills victory?
The essential ingredient, I would agree with the respondents, that you have to get the Bills running game going. That's their bread and butter. I think there's a lot of play-action pass opportunities that are available here against this linebacking core in the secondary of Tampa Bay, and you're not afforded those opportunities if your running game is not successful. And I think there's ways to attack the running game. They do some things defensively. They're going to line up in fronts based on the way the Bills line up offensively, and I think the Bills can set the front that they want defensively by the way they line up and how they pre-snap move, and then they can attack the weak side quite a bit. I hope they use the fullback a lot, because the last time the running game, I think, really got its traction in the second half against Atlanta, DeMarco was in the game a lot. And I, quite frankly, I realize Tolbert's got a different role now because he's going to go in and place of LeSean McCoy in certain situations, but sometimes he's out there blocking as well, and then you can hand it off that quick trap inside at the same time to him because DeMarco doesn't have that many carries. But when Pat was blocking in the running game and they were just attacking the edge against Atlanta, against a very fast defensive team, faster defensive unit than this Tampa mm-hmm. Bay team, mm-hmm. they really found their way, and I hope that they can get back to that on Sunday.
Has it surprised you that they haven't really thrown the ball to Pat DeMarco or Tolbert that much? And coming in, that's kind of what we talked about with them. I mean, these guys can catch the ball out of the backfield as well.
Well, and Tolbert has a couple hundred catches in his career. I mean, I know DeMarco's – I mean, he can catch the ball coming out of the backfield, but they didn't use him real prolifically in Atlanta. I mean, mm-hmm. he caught the ball a few times and becomes an element of surprise, certainly in a third down or a goal line situation. So that doesn't surprise me a lot. I mean, the Tolbert a little bit, but, again, his role has changed a little bit now that he's really the backup tailback right. as opposed to being in a fullback role, and I think they want to protect him in that situation, maybe not expose him to as much contact if he's not running the ball and trying to give LeSean McCoy an opportunity to take a breather here and there. But there's really good opportunities against this defensive unit. They're pretty consistent in what they do, and you have to see if those things unfold, things that you've studied on tape and things that the Bills have prepared for here during the week, if those things are consistent and hold true when game day begins. And if that's the case, I think they'll have a pretty good game plan. I think there's ways they can attack this defensive unit and really get their offense on track this week. But, again, I mean, every game in the league is a difficult game, and if you don't execute efficiently, you don't play your best, they're going to have an opportunity to come in and beat you. But I'd be very surprised if that happened and very disappointed, quite frankly.
Aside from the matchup, Mark, you know, Bills versus Bucks, for the Bills in general, and maybe if you look at it from the perspective of a bye week and fixing yourself over the bye week, what can the Bills do better themselves to just get the running game going? Not how do they attack Tampa Bay, but how can they be better at running the football in general this Sunday and throughout the rest of the season?
Yeah, I mean, it's a couple things. I think one is, first of all, it's not necessarily a schematic thing that they haven't been able to put the numbers up like they have in the previous couple of years. I mean, we remember last year they had some trouble real early in the year, and then they just changed a few little things.
Right.
And it's really focusing in on what plays that they can execute most efficiently, and if they do that, I think they can fix things pretty quickly. I mean, it's about having the right guys in the right positions. And last week, I mean, again, I didn't study Bills film, so I have no idea. And I'm not talking about quality of play or how they play it together, but John Miller was replaced by Vlad Dukas, mm-hmm. who's had a tremendous career in this league to this point in his tenure in the league.
Dukas,
yeah, I mean he's had a good career, but
okay.
But now you've got five guys, and I've talked extensively about how you need synergy from those five guys. Offensive line, defensive backfield are the two groups that need to play together and function as a unit most proficiently if you're going to be effective. And now it seemed like the running game started to come alive in Atlanta, mm-hmm. and then you supplant that right guard for another player. And again, there's a different chemistry that needs to happen in the way those guys play together. And I don't know if that caused some of the problem. I mean, they see these guys every day in practice and feel like they have a really good feel about what might be successful. But I know that it didn't surprise me that the running game was not as successful last week because of the change that they made. Not because he may have played great, but you changed the concept a little bit and you went away from some things you did against Atlanta. And Cincinnati has a pretty good front, quite frankly. I mean, they got some guys inside that can really play. So I'm not saying that's the issue, but I'm saying it's more execution. And then it's not a particular play call. I mean, people say to me, and we've talked about it, well, what do these teams run? They all run the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They all run a G lead or an FG lead where they bring the wing and the guard around. They all run an inside zone, an outside zone. They all run a stretch play. It's just what doses they run it in and how efficient they are at executing it.
Mark Kelso, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network in studio with us. A call about this game on Sunday, about the run game in particular. Mike in Pennsylvania is on the line with us. Mike, go ahead. What's on your mind today?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I'm with Mark. You know, the Bills got to go ahead and, get back to their meat and potatoes, running the football. I mean, that's going to set the tone from here on for the rest of the season. You got to get that running game right, especially against a team that just got, ran over by a rejuvenated Adrian Peterson. So I definitely think you've got to go in there, play mouth football. And then also, I want to see how Tre'Davious White responds from after his last game with A.J. Green. I know he's a competitor. I need him to, you know, to continue to grow as a rookie cornerback. And then I'll say the third thing is turnovers. Keep the ball clean, which the Bills typically do. And I think it should be a Bills win.
Okay, thanks. We talked a lot about the running game, Mark. Mike's second point, though, about Tre'Davious White. I thought there were signs as the Cincinnati game went along that Tre'Davious White had already responded well to some early big plays allowed to A.J. Green.
Yeah, and I didn't get a chance to see the first touchdown, the 71-yarder on film. And I thought maybe that A.J. stuttered him a little bit and forced him to stop his feet. I don't really think that happened. I think he just kind of ran by him, and he may have underestimated his closing speed. And then at the last second, he didn't get a real efficient turn, and then A.J.'s two or three steps ahead of him, and he makes that play. I was a little surprised, you know, that they didn't protect him a little bit more with a cover two situation so his safety would be over the top, because that ball was thrown right on the sideline. So there's no way that his safety's going to be there. The second play, the 40-some yarder that happened, he was in beautiful coverage. I mean, he really recovered well on that dig route, where that was about 15 or 18-yard in route. But I don't know how A.J. Green even caught it, because he didn't see it for more than a split second. And I think he did respond pretty well, because that was a third play of the game. And that can take a cornerback and really send his head spinning, because that's the first time really that Tre'Davious White has been exposed in his young career here. And I thought he responded really well, quite frankly. And I mean, A.J. Green had what? He had probably over 190 or 200 yards of receiving, but 130 of it were on those two plays. So I think he responded pretty well. I just think there's certain situations, you know, when if you're going to do that, you need to maybe bring a little bit more pressure so that there's less time for the quarterback, although it didn't take him that long to get that ball out of his hands on the 71-yarder. So, I mean, I think he responded well. He has been everything as advertised. I mean, he continues to talk about the team game and talk about his teammates and the things they need to do as a secondary unit. So I think he's played really well to this point in the season, and for a rookie, he's just been everything is advertised.
Tre'Davious will be fine. Like the best corners in this league have bad plays. You know, and you're playing against one of the best receivers in the league. And so, yeah, he's going to be fine. He bounced back and had a very good game. He did the same thing in the Denver game, where he gave up some big plays early in the game. He bounced back and had a good game the rest of the game. He'll be fine. I mean, he has played well for the most part, with the exception of a couple of plays. He has played well this season.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, and look at – if you want to have an analogy, look at – Jalen Ramsey. I know we're switching teams here, but Ramsey was a first-round draft pick, played mostly safety in college, but they moved him to corner in Jacksonville. Yep. And then last year here, Sammy Watkins beat him on a big play, but their defense still played well. They have a terrific defense, and he has started his second year really well also, and certainly didn't depreciate his performance throughout the rest of the year with Jacksonville. And I suspect the same will be with Tre'Davious, and he seems like a young man with a growth mindset. So he'll learn from that play and learn that, hey, I have a better feel now when those guys close me up, when I need to turn, particularly against a guy who's got elite talent like A.J. Green.
You know, his third point was to keep creating turnovers.
Yeah.
And I agree with that. You have to keep creating those turnovers. But even bigger than that, the offense have to score points off of those turnovers. And that's something that they haven't done this year.
Yep.
They haven't, you know, really taken over a game by – getting an interception and then scoring a touchdown off of that. They end up settling for field goals. When you actually get an interception or a fumble and then you score a touchdown, it's demoralizing to a team, you know? And so, yeah, keep creating those turnovers, but score touchdowns off of those turnovers.
Well, let's go some play action pass after that, huh? And let's strike quick after that turnover, like I always say. I mean, and that's part of the problem with this offensive unit, Donald, is that they haven't been able to stretch teams vertically, so you get that eighth guy down in the box. That's part of the problem with the running game as well. When they run play action pass on first down a lot, they've opened up the running game also. So it's a compliment. You can't just say we got to get the running game going or we got to get the play action pass game going. Both of those things will assist the other in some way, shape, or form.
Mark, Tre'Davious and the rest of the Bills defense, on who are the weapons they have to concern themselves with most on Tampa's side of the ball?
I hope Jameis Winston is okay, but if Ryan Fitzpatrick gets in the game, when is the last time the two Harvard collegiate players have been on the field at the same time?
Well, that touchdown pass to break last week, first time Harvard to Harvard in the NFL.
Is that first time? So, yeah. And And Brate, I mean, he's been terrific. I mean, I think he's second in the team in receptions behind Mike Evans.
So he's the number one really target? Difficult. He's the number one weapon for them, Brate?
In the red area. He's the number one weapon down the seam because Ryan Fitzpatrick throws the back shoulder and Winston has thrown some really good balls to Brate as well down the middle of the field. And he's a weapon in the middle of the field because he can extend the linebackers. And if he's in front of the safeties, he's going to make catches. He catches the ball outside his body frame and he can do some damage. Mike Evans is I think, one of the elite guys in this league because he's got a big body. He can get vertical at times. Doesn't have quite the vertical speed that Deshaun Jackson has, but Jackson still can get after it. I'm going to tell you what, if you play off him and he runs a little stutter and go or he tries to just go vertical on you, I mean, you better turn and run because it's going to be tough to catch him. He still has blazing speed, and that helps Winston in that whole situation. And then Martin's kind of coming into his own again after he's back off the suspension. Great contact balance, and he's been great in the run game. And then Sims has been really, really effective in the passing game as well, catching a lot of balls out of the backfield. So they've got a lot of offensive weapons. Offensive line is solid. Nobody really, really jumped out at me, but certainly a solid group. Winston seems to have enough time to stand back there and throw, reluctant to run, wants to stay in the pocket and deliver the ball down the field. And like all good quarterbacks in this league, he's kind of growing into that situation where he can move subtly in the pocket, buy a little bit more time, and then try to deliver the football.
You know, Winston is so interesting because as you talk about him growing and maturing as a quarterback, he still has those games or those throws where it's like, what was that? You know, where it's like, James, where are you throwing the ball to? What are you even looking at? You know, and for me, even though you can see his maturity in the locker room and everything, on the field, he just still makes those types of plays, you know. And it's, I think he also is a gunslinger, and he will give it up to you. He will throw interceptions.
Only a receiver can say that. DB is really happy when he starts throwing the ball errantly. Hey, look, it happens to everybody. He's a young quarterback with a lot of I think he's had a lot of weight on his shoulders for that franchise, and I think the expectations are extremely high. He's delivered on a lot of those expectations coming into the league, and I think he continues to grow, and he's got some good weapons around him. And if he continues on this progression, he'll be able to play with that top group of quarterbacks probably for a good number of years during his career. But you can't do it alone. And look, when I studied the New England film, as good a statistical day as Tom Brate had, he missed Chris Hogan four or five times when he was wide open through the middle of the field. And that's why I think the Bills can have some success in the middle of the field because New England had a lot of success there. But a lot of times the ball just got away from Brate. I don't know what was going on, but he threw it at their feet and then he threw it behind him. The interception was a result of an errant throw, not any responsibility of Hogan. And Hogan had to make a great catch on the outside of his body that he threw behind. So I don't know what was going on, but it doesn't matter what quarterback you are in the league and how much experience or quality of play that you have. I mean, some throws just don't do the right thing.
How does O.J. Howard, 19th overall pick, not wind up on the list of, you know, potential threats offensively for Tampa Bay?
Well, I mean, I think there's things they need to learn. And if I go back, I don't want to talk about New England, but I'm going to mention Gronkowski again. So when he first came into the league, prolific pass catcher, but not a great blocker. I think that's where O.J. Howard is. Really good pass catcher. If you flex him out and put him about 5 yards from the offensive tackle and you expect him to man up against a linebacker or a nickel or dime defensive back, he's going to win those battles. He can get vertical. He can really help your defense. But I think they need him to be really involved in the running game as well. And right now, that's not the strength of his game and not something I think he did a large percentage of the time at Alabama. So I think he's growing into that position, certainly has the body type and the athleticism to really help this team. But, Brate's been great, and those two guys present a really lethal combination when you can have 12 personnel and you have them both on the same side, and now the play-action pass game becomes a big option for Jameis Winston or Ryan Fitzpatrick as well. So, it's a good example of how difficult this league is, right? And I'm gonna compare them just because they're the same position, but Nick O'Leary and O.J. Howard, and I know Nick O'Leary did not come out with touted as an O.J. Howard, but he was a Mackey Award winner. And look how he struggled his rookie year, and now look how he's starting to come into his own and really play well. He blocks really well in the running game, and he's making some plays downfield, you know, with the catches off the arm of Tyrod Taylor. So I think O.J. Howard is it's a good progression. I haven't seen a ton of film on him, but I just think he's growing into that position. He's going to have to be able to handle defensive ends again, which he probably was better athletically than most of the guys he played against in college. He is not here in the NFL. There's a lot of good guys.
I told Donald at the top of the show, I have a really good feeling about this game, the Bills' chances, the weather's going to be great, the crowd is going to be sold out. I think we're in for a memorable Sunday. And, you know, with three home games in the next four, I think this is the meat of the schedule, and this is where you start building something. I think it starts Sunday.
Yeah, and I think, I mean – the mentality has to be right for a bye week, because obviously you want to have some rest and you want to focus on fundamentals a little bit again, because you can't really do that. You're game planning every week. The fundamental focus goes away at the end of training camp pretty much. So you can focus on fundamentals a little bit. And I think this team likes to be fundamentally sound. I like what I see this weekend. I think it's going to be a good opportunity for this team. But it's a good opportunity not just to win a football game, but to put a stamp on the early part of the season and say, you know what, when we play at our best, we really can play well. And if they get that running game going, it concerns me a little bit that Oakland's on the heels of this, because, you know, and if you talk about looking forward, I mean, I think, obviously, you know how I feel about Derek Carr. I think he's one of the really great young quarterbacks in this league and can do an awful lot of things. So don't want Bills thinking about that. I suspect this coaching staff has made sure that they'll protect against that mentality. So they've got to go out. Not only can I think they win this game, but they can put a stamp on some things here. They can continue to play well defensively and then get their running game going and then see if they can continue that trend. Got to win games at home if you want any thoughts of getting to the postseason. And this is another opportunity at home against, like you said, a sellout crowd. And hopefully they'll put together a great effort.
Can't wait till Sunday. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, exciting. Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised. I can't believe the weather's going to be like it is.
How about it?
Yeah.
Love it. Mark Kelso is going to be with us Sunday for the call of the game on WGR and our Bills Radio Network, the Bills and the Tampa Bay Bucks at 1 o'clock with pregame coverage starting at 11 a.m. on the network. Thank you, Mark Kelso. And we've got more to come. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones. Our thanks to Mark Kelso for joining us. I think he didn't say it, and I don't ask him to pick a winner, because I feel uncomfortable doing that. I'm not betting here. But I get the sense from Mark Kelso that he feels pretty optimistic about the Bills' chances, right? You pick up
you
on
should.
That?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think you should. I mean, first of all, coming back home, this team has been good at home, you know, and that's first and foremost. Coming back home off of a bye week, guys feeling a lot better or a little bit better than they were, you know, going into the bye week. And when you look at this Tampa Bay team, they do have weapons on offense that can really hurt you. Jameis has been a little bit inconsistent, but their defense is really the reason why you would be optimistic about this game, because their defense, like you were just talking about, they play a little bit softer in the secondary. They have Gerald McCoy up front. He's really the only one that.
That's it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we know Ayers on the outside, but yeah, he's like the only one that's like, you have to really worry about up front. And their linebackers are not that good either, you know. And so that defense, this offense, you would think should be able to get going somewhat against this defense.
This is the game. I can feel it. Tom calling from West Seneca. Hello, Tom. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
John, Don, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Sure.
I wanted to mention about the 12th man, you know, the crescendo roar of 80,000 fans. That's going to be a big asset for us. I'm confident about the defense, and I've always, this might be a boring answer, but I've always thought that the running game and the passing game complement each other. If you're doing good at the pass, it'll spin off into the running game, and you'll have a nice balanced attack. And Chris, I have to comment about something I said. I found it kind of amusing, the pushing off in the NFL. You see a lot of it. Some of it is really flagrant, but some of these guys, these professional wide receivers, they do it in a way they make it look pretty and almost legal. And and they get away with it. So I agree with you on that. There's pushing off, but some make it look pretty, and I'm glad they don't call it all the time. You know, it just they got to be able to touch each other a little bit, and that's pretty much it.
Okay.
I had a question for Mark, but he's not there. I was just wondering if that accoutrement he used to wear on his helmet, if that actually worked. So that's it, guys. Go Bills. We are going to win.
Thanks, Tom.
What did he wear on his helmet?
Oh, he had the shell, the plastic cap to avoid concussions.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like the only one on the team?
Yeah, only one in the league for a while.
And they didn't say anything about it?
No.
Wow, okay. That's crazy.
Yeah, he was noted for that, the kazoo helmet they call
it. Kazoo, oh, okay.
Yeah. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and Greg Cosell, executive producer of ESPN NFL Matchup, standing by to join us to look at last night's game, to look at the Bills-Bucks matchup, and the rest of the league. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update comes from One Bills Drive. The Bills have wrapped up their practice week today with a light walkthrough tomorrow as they get set to host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Sunday. And the word from Tampa is that Jameis Winston will start against the Bills on Sunday. That from head coach Dirk Cutter about an hour or so ago. Winston's status in question for the last couple of days. Did not throw much at all on Wednesday and Thursday, but apparently got in some throwing today and is ready to start against the Bills on Sunday. So you can put that question to bed. The Bills say they're going to wait to see whether Jordan Matthews will be ready to play against the Bucs on Sunday as he comes off that thumb injury suffered a couple of weeks ago against Atlanta. Jordan Matthews has practiced all week, and the Bills say they'll probably take it right up to game time to see if Matthews will be ready to play. Bills-Bucs, 1 o'clock on Sunday. Pregame coverage on the radio network starts at 11 a.m. I'll have the call of the game with Mark Kelso starting at 1 o'clock from a sold-out New Era Field. Marshawn Lynch ejected from last night's Raiders 31-30 win against the Kansas City Chiefs in the second quarter for making contact with an official. Ran off the sideline and into a scrum with Chiefs cornerback after Chiefs quarterback Marcus Peters hit Derek Carr late, drawing a flag for a personal foul. Several offensive linemen got into the scrum. Peters showed up for the game wearing a Beast Mode sweatshirt, which is Lynch's apparel line. Marshawn Lynch did not leave the game, as was previously reported, was spotted in the Raiders' locker room after their comeback 31-30 win over Kansas City. Martavis Bryant may want to trade, but the Steelers say it's not going to happen. We are not looking to trade Martavis, says Steelers president Art Rooney. That's what he told the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport first reported Sunday that Bryant requested a trade recently. Buffalo Sabres back in action after their West Coast road swing that saw them win just one of four games back home tonight with the game against the Vancouver Canucks. If he dresses, as he is expected to do so, Kyle Okposo will play in his 600th NHL game. Seven players were absent from Sabres practice today and baseball playoffs tonight. Game 6, the Yankees in Houston with the Yankees on top in that series 3-2. It is the John Murphy Show. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones, and joined on Skype by our regular Friday visitor. He is a executive producer of ESPN's NFL Insider, or I'm sorry, ESPN's NFL Matchup. We're happy to have Greg Cosell on the line with us. Hi, Greg. John Murphy and Donald here. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. We appreciate it.
Murph, Donald, good to be back with you guys after a bye week.
Yeah, it's good to talk some football on a Friday again with you. The word comes out from Dirk Cutter about an hour ago that Jameis Winston is ready to go, ready to start. What can we expect from Jameis Winston after inactivity for most of the week and coming off that shoulder injury? What do you think?
He's an aggressive thrower, Murph. This offense, they'd like to work off the run game, but they've not been able to run the ball with any kind of consistency. But they'd like that to be the starting point and then work off that. They're a five-step, seven-step drop passing team. They like to get the ball at the intermediate and deeper levels. Winston is an aggressive, confident thrower. Sometimes he's a little reckless. He can be a little sloppy. But that's the kind of pass game that they want, and that's the kind of pass game that they normally have.
Greg, one of the things that is interesting to me is really they haven't really been able to get DeSean Jackson. He and DeSean Jackson just aren't on the same page.
Nope.
What do you see with that connection right there?
Yeah, that's always a hard question, Donald, because when a ball's not thrown to a guy, it's hard for me to get into people's heads.
Mm-hmm.
But they've missed a few that have been there,
right.
And maybe if they hit those, we wouldn't be having this conversation. But but they certainly haven't targeted him as much as one might have expected when they made that signing in the offseason. So, it's an odd situation. Look, in some ways, it's somewhat, I guess, like Amari Cooper last night, not targeted at all for 3-4 weeks, and then he's targeted 19 times last night. So that's a hard question to answer, but there's no question that Jackson has certainly not been the deep threat in their offense that they were hoping, at this point.
Greg, when you refer to Jameis Winston as an aggressive thrower and a little bit sloppy, are these developmental things for a guy in his third year, or is this something that he, is going to be the way he plays throughout the course of his career?
Murph, that's the big question with him, is can that be channeled to some degree? Because when guys are aggressive, which in the NFL there are situations, as Donald well knows, that require aggressive throwing. I mean, when it's 3rd and 9, long yardage on 3rd down, you can't be throwing checkdowns. You have to make stick throws into tighter windows. So now quarterbacks who do that, and it's in their DNA like it is with Jameis, now you have to find that balance. He has to sort of figure it out with, hey, can I make this throw in this situation? There are times he does make the throws. There are other times that he makes the wrong throw or he truly forces the ball. So that takes time. That's a balance. I'd be hard-pressed to say, Murph, that this is the way he is his whole career right now. I don't think there's enough evidence to say that.
Do you feel like he's grown as a quarterback on the field? Do you feel like he's gotten better year after year?
I think he's gotten better incrementally. I wouldn't say he's gotten better by leaps and bounds. He's a good passer. He's an aggressive thrower. He's a confident thrower. That's in his DNA. I think that he has to develop a feel for his overall team and what he can do and what he can't do situationally. And I think that's the next step for him.
On the line with Greg Cosell, executive producer and analyst for NFL Matchup on ESPN, longtime senior producer at NFL Films. Hey Greg, the rest of Tampa Bay's offense, an array of good weapons, which seems underutilized, at least through their first 5 games. What do you attribute that to?
Well, I think that's when an offense is sort of a little arrhythmic and a little out of sync, as they are right now, because they're not running the ball with any consistency. And I think, like I said, I think Dirk Cutter would like his offense to start with the run game. And while all this might sound cliched, it's always true. If you can stay ahead of the sticks and have balance in your offense, your quarterback's going to be placed in better situations. They're struggling with that right now. I will say this, though. The one player who I think is a really good player, and I know Sean McDermott and staff will be well aware of him, is Cameron Brate, the tight end. He is a really good player. He's big. He's athletic. He gets down the field. He's not just a short receiving tight end. He runs intermediate and vertical routes.
And in terms of production, he has really overshadowed the premium draft pick, right? O.J. Howard. How does that happen, and where do you think they're going with O.J. Howard?
Well, I think Howard will still be a good player. I think Brate's been there. Brate's a really good player. They're trying to incorporate both. Obviously, every team lines up in 2 tight end sets. They'll both play. But I think when they line up with 1 tight end, if it's 11 personnel, meaning 3 wide receivers and 1 tight end, more often than not, that tight end will be Brate. At this point, he's the more consistent receiver at the position.
Now, Brate is especially dangerous in the red zone. They use him a lot in the red zone.
They sure do. They sure do. And he normally runs inside routes. You have to be real careful with those seam routes that he runs. That's where, Jameis is – even though Jameis can be a little sloppy and undisciplined and force some balls, Jameis does have a good feel for coverage and a good feel for manipulating safeties, and he does a really nice job in the red zone getting the ball to Brate.
Greg Cosell joins us from ESPN's NFL Matchup Show. You can see it Saturday mornings at 8:30 on ESPN2, Sunday at 6:30 in the morning on ESPN. You mentioned how the Bucs offense is, I think the word you used was arrhythmic. The same could be said about Buffalo's offense, I would think. And I wonder, Greg, if you were, advising the Bills, what would be the focus over this bye week as to finding a fix for their offensive issues? What would you tell them they need to do to kind of get on track offensively this year?
Well, Murph, I love working with you guys, but my investment portfolio isn't large enough to be advising the Bills right now. Well, I'll say this. I think they're playing a defense this week that is – it's an execution style defense, not a scheme style defense, okay? Which means that they're not going to do a lot of things. They don't blitz a lot. They play a lot of zone coverage. So therefore, they're somewhat predictable. Now, predictability does not mean negativity, but it's a defense you know what you're going to get. So now for the Bills, I don't think that's going to change much of how the Bills approach it, but I think there's great opportunities for first and 10 passing, particularly with play action, which is the strength of their pass game. Tyrod Taylor has been very, very good on first and 10, and he's been very, very good off play action. And I think they need to attack with play action against this defense. There are opportunities.
Greg Cosell on the line with us. As far as the run game, I mean, McCoy hasn't hit the end zone yet for the Buffalo Bills this year. What's the problem there, and what's the solution for the Bills moving forward?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think their run game's been a little erratic. I think they would like more consistency. To me, this O-line is built to be a mauling O-line. I don't view it, watching tape, as a highly athletic offensive line. I think it's built more to be a mauling offensive line, and I think then it becomes opponent-specific, because there are some defensive lines they'll face that are more athletic than their O-line, and they struggle a little bit. And then there's others where they can line up and play some power football and knock them back, and it can be effective. I think that they'll struggle a little bit in this game, which doesn't mean that, hey, look, you can always break off a big one and then the yards look great. But I think they'll struggle quite a bit with Gerald McCoy, who's one of the quickest three-technique D tackles in the league. He's got dominant quickness inside.
Now, as you talk about them being a mauling offensive line, that's kind of what they've done the last couple of years. This year with the zone scheme, do you feel like this offensive line might not fit this zone scheme that they're running?
That's a hard question. I'm not with them every day, and I'm certainly not going to look to, you know, rip a coach. I never do that, because they know their players better than I do. Just for me, from tape study, I think they can run inside zone for sure. When you start talking about outside zone, where you really need some athleticism, you know, the old phrase that we all like to use is elephants on parade. When you need that kind of athleticism that gets you beyond a small confined space, I guess I would have a question whether they could do that consistently, Donald.
Greg Cosell on the line with us from NFL Matchup on ESPN. Let's turn away from the Bills for a second and talk about the game that kicked off the NFL weekend. Last night's almost instant classic between the Chiefs and the Raiders. What did you make of Derek Carr's game and his end of game last night, Greg?
I mean, Derek Carr's a really good player. You know, he's got hurt this year. We don't know if, you know, when he came back, who knows, maybe he came back a week early. That's impossible to say. But this is a team that has a lot of weapons. They're struggling to run the ball, and in fact, they sort of abandoned it last night. And he dropped back, what, about 55 times, although I don't think he was sacked, so maybe it was a few less. But they do have weapons. They finally got Cooper back involved, and it was clear that they wanted to put Cooper inside, try to create some matchups with Philip Gaines, the slot corner for the Chiefs, who a lot of teams look at as a weakness in their coverage, because the Chiefs are a high-percentage man-to-man defense. But I think their pass game was pretty good.
Their pass game was good, and we were talking about it earlier in the show. Derek Carr, you know, he got off to, I guess, a shaky start, but that last drive of the game, I mean, he threw so many touchdown passes on one drive. It was amazing.
Yeah, you know, I was watching it, and I really wanted to go to bed because, you know, we shoot the matchup show on Friday.
Yeah. And we were in the same boat here. You know, Donald and I were laughing about that. Neither one of us, and nobody wanted to watch that whole game. We got sucked into it last night.
Yeah, and you know, based on that final end of the game, I thought we might still be talking about untimed downs now.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen so many untimed downs in a game.
Kansas City's offense, cause for concern, or are they going to be all right? What do you think the issues are in Kansas City?
I don't think they have issues, Murph. They're, to me, a highly schemed offense. I think Andy Reid is really, really good at designing pass game concepts. You see a lot of the same concepts, just with different people in different formations, but they're very good with that. I think that's what Alex Smith is. I don't think Alex Smith is a drop-back quarterback. I think he's a quarterback that needs the scheme to present the defined opportunities for him. He's not a late-in-the-down passer where he can go through progressions and sit in the pocket. So I don't think there's cause for concern. I think you know, they hit some big plays throughout the first part of this season, and I think it made people think that Alex Smith was different. I don't think he's different. I just think the plays were there.
Around the league a little bit, it looks like almost the nightmare scenario for the Green Bay Packers with Rodgers out, and now they go with Brett Hundley. They're home against New Orleans on Sunday. What kind of a quarterback is Brett Hundley, and how much will things change, you think, in Green Bay's offensive approach?
Well, I think, Murph, what you're going to see is you'll see two things. I think you will see more of a conventional run game with Hundley under center. And number two, I think you'll see him in the gun doing what a lot of teams with those mobile quarterbacks do with that multi-dimensional run game where you have all those read elements in the run game, all those backfield actions that cause conflict for defenders, help your run game, help the quarterback have easier reads in the pass game. I think you'll see a lot of that. I think that Hundley is a good runner. They'll do that both by design, and he'll run improvisationally, and they'll just look to keep the chains moving so they can shorten games, and because they're not going to be playing 35-32 games now. That's just not going to happen.
They're definitely not going to be doing that. But what happens when you have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers who's been running the show for so long, and Hundley's been behind him, so obviously he's been learning that system, but he's not necessarily the same type of quarterback. Do they have to really change what they're doing on offense to fit what he is good at doing?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously, you don't look, you know, Donald, every team has a pretty voluminous playbook. You just take different plays and different concepts because Brett Hundley can't do what Aaron Rodgers did. He certainly can't do it in terms of the sort of improvisational plays that Rodgers makes, that Rodgers throws the ball down the field 25-30 yards. You know, only Aaron Rodgers can do that. Mm-hmm. So now you probably have to play within structure a little more. You have to try to create that structure schematically and tactically and then hope that Hundley executes that. And then every once in a while, you hope that he makes an improvisational play that can move the chains.
Greg Cosell from NFL Matchup on ESPN joins us. They got the Super Bowl rematch coming up Sunday night, Greg. And I wonder your take on the Atlanta Falcons after, you know, their meltdown against Miami last Sunday, where they are at and how equipped are they to go up there to Foxborough Sunday night and battle with New England?
Yeah, they're another offense that's not quite the same. Certainly Julio Jones has not been as involved as we would have all expected. You know, I think that's been a factor. They've actually run the ball very well, but their pass game has not been the same at all. And, you know, that's something that they'll have to look to get back to. The Patriots have been a team that still plays a lot of man-to-man coverage. We know what Bill Belichick does with big-time receivers. He'll selectively double-team Julio Jones. That'll be based on down and distance. It'll be based on field location. You know, he does that a lot in the red zone. So that's what they'll do. But like I said, the Falcons right now, they're not playing, certainly not as they did a year ago offensively.
Now, you would think for that offense, they would look at this Patriots defense and say, this is a defense we can probably get it going, because the Patriots defense haven't really been able to stop anyone.
No.
They've been outscoring people, but I would think this Falcons offense and Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu would say, this is a defense we can truly get going.
And that's a great point, because the one thing the Patriots don't have is a true pass rusher. Mm-hmm. So when they line up in their sub package, whether it's nickel, dime, whatever it may be, their predominant edge pass rushers are Dietrich Wise and Cassius Marsh, and occasionally Trey Flowers, who's better suited to play inside. So they don't really have a true edge pass rusher. They'll blitz on occasion, but they're not a high percentage blitz team. So you'd like to think, if you're Atlanta, that at least Matt Ryan can be comfortable in the pocket.
Hey, Greg, another game coming up in Miami, the Jets and the Dolphins. A lot of Bills fans will keep an eye on that one. The Jets, I think, surprising people, right, with their 3-3 record. Is it smoke and mirrors, or is there something real there with the New York Jets first six?
I really like their defense, Murph. I think those two rookie safeties, Marcus May and particularly Jamal Adams, are going to be really, really good players. And I think that safety is such an important position in the league now. And they still have some quality. I mean, you know, Lee, the second-year linebacker from Ohio State, is a very good athlete. They still have Williams. They still have Wilkerson. I mean, they've got some good players. This is not a defense lacking talent. So, you know, I think their defense has probably played a lot better than people might have thought. And you can say what you want, not you guys, but people, about Josh McCown. But he's a professional quarterback. You can line up and play with Josh McCown.
What has happened to make safety more important now than it was maybe several years ago?
Well, certainly the tight end position has really increased the importance of safety. I think more teams than ever play with single high coverage where there's one deep safety and then the other safety is more of a box player and much more involved in the action. So, you know, those are just two quick reasons. But the tight end is now such an important player in the NFL that you need a safety who has that kind of ability, you know, the coverage ability, athletic ability, and has a multiple skill set. Jamal Adams is that guy for sure.
Yeah. I think that's why we're starting to see more and more corners coming out of college be converted to safeties.
Yep, that's a great point, because you have to cover tight ends now. And we're not talking about covering tight ends lined up next to the tackle.
Right.
We're talking about covering tight ends when they're detached from the formation, essentially running wide receiver routes.
And, Greg, you talked about, you know, Josh McCown's a professional quarterback. I got that sense watching Jay Cutler and the Dolphins, you know, come back last week. And we all know the Jay Cutler story and the erraticism that's been there. But when push comes to shove, he's got a gun and he's not afraid to use it, right?
Well, he's not afraid to throw it. But you know what struck me more about that game, Murph, was the physicality with which they ran the football. Jay Ajayi is a relentless, determined runner. And they ran the football really well. They stayed with it, which was, you know, that says a lot, because they were down 17-0. They did not give up on the run game. And their O-line did a really good job in that game. And I think that their offense really starts with Jay Ajayi now.
One last game to talk about, the Rams and the Cardinals over in London. You know, last week Adrian Peterson came out and had a good game. What do you expect out of Adrian Peterson and then this Rams offense in this game?
Well, the Rams defense is a much tougher defense than the Bucs defense. My guess is that Peterson won't put up that kind of yardage in this game. Now, the Cards will try to stay balanced, but I don't believe he'll have that kind of success. I think as far as the Rams offense, I think they've been not quite as sharp the last couple of weeks as they were maybe the first 3-4 weeks of the season with Jared Goff. And I think Goff has to work through a little bit, dealing with pressure and dealing with collapsing pockets and muddied pockets. And I think you're going to see the Cards attack him with, you know, they're a high percentage blitz defense under James Betcher. They were with Todd Bowles prior. James Betcher's done a lot of the same things. They attack, they blitz, they go after the quarterback. And I think they will do that.
Last thing, Greg, let me circle back to the Bills-Bucks game, which we're kind of excited about here. How do you anticipate this game playing out? And who do you think will come out on top Sunday here in Buffalo?
Well, I'll just say this, guys. You know, don't forget Sean McDermott has played against this offense, you know, for a number of years, you know, because he was in Carolina. And this offense has not gone off against Sean McDermott's defense. Now, I think Sean McDermott had better overall players in Carolina than they do in Buffalo, but I think he has a terrific feel for it. It would not surprise me if this game plays out the way the Bills want it to play out. Now, that doesn't mean they'll win the game, because who knows? But I would expect this game not to be a real high-scoring game. I would expect it to be in the 23-20 kind of range, and I think the Bills have a real shot to win this game.
Okay, we'll see what happens, Greg. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Friday.
All right, guys, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks. Greg Cosell, the executive producer and analyst for NFL Matchup on ESPN. You can catch that tomorrow, 8:30 in the morning on ESPN2, Sunday morning at 6:30 on ESPN. Longtime senior producer at NFL Films, Greg Cosell, joins us on Fridays. The Bills injury update is out for today. Head coach Sean McDermott releasing the injury info. Nothing really shocking here. Charles Clay and Ramon Humber, both of them out of the game. Humber with the thumb and Clay with his knee. E.J. Gaines is questionable with his groin. Leonard Johnson is questionable with a hamstring. Jordan Matthews questionable with his thumb. Important to note that it was full practice today for Jordan Matthews after limited practice the last 2 days. So he is trending in the right direction, Jordan Matthews, to be ready to return to the field on Sunday against Tampa Bay. We're back with more in a moment. We're going to open up phone lines, too, when we return at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. What do you think the key is for the Bills to come out on top Sunday against Tampa Bay? Give us a call. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show on a Friday, Gene Pant Friday, here at One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Donald Jones. coming to you live. You want a water? Is that what you want?
Yeah, I'll take that water.
Is that what you want? I guess. I get anything else? You want a cookie?
I mean,
I had a cookie.
I just had a cookie. I'm going to go get some more in the next break.
Gene Pant Friday here, it's Friday, which means there's a game Sunday. Bills and the Tampa Bay Bucks. Your thoughts on that game? Donald and I have given us some of our thoughts about the keys, but our Twitter poll deals with the key for the Buffalo Bills and want to revisit that. What do you think is the key for a Bills victory this Sunday? What has to happen? And of course, Kelso turned it around and said, well, there's a bunch of things. I know there's a bunch of things that has to happen, but what did he start talking about, a recipe or something?
Did he? Yeah. He said, you know, when you're cooking, there's a lot of ingredients that go into.
So think of it this way. What is the main ingredient?
The main ingredient.
What is
because
the most
important
thing?
When you're cooking, you know how you cook.
I do cook.
You know how you make something and you're like, it's missing something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the main ingredient right there. Whatever it is that you can't taste, that's the one that takes it over the top.
Yeah.
That gives it that kick. So what's the main ingredient?
What's the main ingredient to a Bills victory this Sunday over the Bucks? A Twitter poll. Right now, with over 1,000 votes in over the course of an hour and a half, 61% of you say they got to get the run game going. I think that's fairly obvious. 19% of you say they need better offensive line play. I agree. In fact, I think those two are hand in hand. 14% say they have to handle Tampa Bay's offensive weapons. 6% say something else. What do you think? 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550 or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Give us your thoughts. What is what's the key, the main ingredient for a Buffalo victory against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Sunday? Sean McDermott, we saw the injury report a moment ago. Jordan Matthews is listed as questionable, although full practice today. Sean McDermott doesn't have to worry about Fitzpatrick or Jameis Winston because the Bucs have announced that Jameis Winston will get the start. But McDermott knows that the Bills can get better. In fact, they have to get better in the run game. That's what the number one answer is on our Twitter poll. McDermott met with the media today, the Buffalo Bills head coach, and talked about, he tried to get as specific as he could, as specific as he wanted to anyway, about what the Bills need to do better in the run game on offense. Here's what Coach McDermott had to say.
You know, there's things in the running game we can do better. And there's things that we have done well, Matt. Honestly, it's just there's things we can do better. And we spent a lot of time, Coach Dennis and the offensive staff, really putting their collective minds together and saying, hey, what can we do? What fits us? What are we doing well? What do we want to keep doing? And then were some things where was it, if we didn't do it well, was it because of scheme flaw? Was it because of a guy just didn't do his job? So, turn the tape on, you find some things that a stat may say X, but really when you look at it, and my answer to Sal, no different here, you look at it and you say either not as good as we thought or not as bad as we thought. So, we just got to continue to get better in that area.
Not a whole lot of specifics there, Donald. And I don't blame him. What's he going to do, lay it out for you? Here's what we're going to do to get the run game better. I know that won't happen.
Yeah,
that's understandable.
He'll never do that.
No, nor should he. But I think there's an acknowledgement that they have to get better running the football. It sort of is the foundation, the bedrock for what they want to do on offense.
You know, Greg talked about Tampa Bay, their offense kind of works off of the run. And Dirk, what's his name, Dirk Cutter?
Yep.
He wants that running game to get going, and the passing game, play action pass, would come off of that. This Bills offense is the same way. They want to run the ball, and play action works off the run game. This is not a pass first type of offense. It's just not, And so, they want to get better in the run game. But for me, it just starts out with the offensive line.
Right.
And if that offensive line is clicking and they're driving guys off the ball, LeSean McCoy can find the hole, but he can't. It's hard for him to find the hole when he touches the ball. There's somebody in his face. He has to juke that guy. By the time he jukes that guy, the hole that might have been there is now closed, and he can't go anywhere else. So they have to make sure that all five of those guys, and then you put the tight ends in there as well, are on point with their blocking.
On the offensive line, McDermott would not commit today to having Cordy Glenn back in the starting lineup as he returns from injury, but it appears that's going to be the case. He got first-team reps all week, and it appears that Vlad Dukas is likely to get a second consecutive start at right guard, but no commitment on that from McDermott as well. And earlier in the week, Rick Dennison, the Bills' offensive coordinator, talked about the competition continues at right guard between Dukas and John Miller. So the question about right guard competition came up for Sean McDermott today, and he was asked about the impact that, having that rotating cast at the right guard position and maybe a tackle now, what impact that would have on the performance of the offensive line. Here's what the head coach had to say.
You know, really more so the former, which with respect to taking a look and seeing who our best five are. John really did some good things, and I would also add the way that John's handled this as a professional has been outstanding. Really appreciate that, and you know, looking to take another look potentially this week. But those two have battled it out. They continue to battle it out, and the fact to me that they understand that things are earned goes a long way towards building our team.
There's no commitment there from the coach as far as who's going to start.
I wonder if we ever truly get a commitment. Like, okay, Dukas is our guy moving forward.
Why are they – it's almost like it doesn't matter what they say because, let's face it, if Dukas starts Sunday
– yeah, you would think he's the guy.
He's the guy.
He's the guy moving forward. But I don't know if he'll ever come out and say –
right, you might be right.
Dukas is the guy.
You might be right about that.
Because, here's the thing. He has the personality of competition, competition, competition. So let's just keep the competition going. Let's just make these guys feel like they're in a competition, in a battle every week. You know, for me, as long as you – like, I don't care if you make those guys feel that way, but as long as you're not subbing them every two series,
yeah,
you know, because that's tough. That's tough on the entire offensive line. But if you make it feel like, look, you don't have this spot locked, engraved, and so you need to come out and play every single play like it's your last play, then you'll do that. You should do that anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, that right there just, you know, heightens your senses a little bit. But I just don't want to see the subbing in and out every two series. That's
right.
Tough.
Which they haven't done, really, right, in the regular season. Mm-hmm. Hey, we've got a call on the line. Anthony in Orchard Park. Anthony, with some thoughts on the matchup Sunday, the Bills and the Bucks. What do you think, Anthony?
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. I was driving to Pittsburgh, and I was compelled to call. I think two things about this weekend. I think, number one, you have an opportunity to get Shady out in space with the type of defense you guys were saying that they run with the zone and all that, nothing too complicated. I think Shady can have some space. Or have some advantages, you know, getting the ball in space, screens and whatnot, and running too, of course. And number two is I'm really excited that Winston is playing. I was kind of nervous that Fitzpatrick was going to play because he really has nothing to lose at this stage in his career, and we know how he is kind of a reckless gunslinger. And I think if Fitzpatrick had played, I think honestly he had a decent chance of putting some numbers up on us because he just takes chances. Now, conversely, with Winston coming off an injury and, you know, we don't know if he's at 100% or not, I think there's an opportunity for the defense to really attack him and get after him, and I think that maybe he'll start second-guessing himself, being partially injured, and maybe making some throws, which is going to lead to turnovers, which we're already good at. So those two key areas of opportunity I see for us, and this is a really good chance for us to establish ourselves this weekend.
Hey, Anthony, do you know a guy by the name of Jay Harris? I was informed that you might know him. Did you say you do?
I went to school with Jay. Make sure I think he said today he would work for free on the books for you, off the books for you guys.
Did what? He say that? Really?
Yeah. You know, just rumor mill, but you know.
Oh, all right. Well, you know, Murph and I can split his salary then.
We can take it. Yeah. Absolutely.
Definitely.
All right. Thanks, Anthony. I think you're onto something with LeSean McCoy. In fact, I'm ready to make a bold prediction. Shady's going to run for over 100 yards in this game, and he's going to get in the end zone, not once, but twice, either running or passing, twice in the end zone. There's my bold prediction, Donald. You want to bet me? Because I feel that's how good I feel about this game and this matchup.
You must truly feel good because you've never said, do you want to bet me on air? You always say, I'm not a bet. We can't bet.
I'm not a betting man, but I'm not. And we can't obviously make a bet. I mean, we're sitting here in an NFL edifice
here. Put your money on the wood.
All right, let's see what we got.
Let's see what Murph pulls out and what I pull out.
I will bet you $5.
Okay.
We can't do this on the air. What am I, losing my mind? I'll bet you a soda pop.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll bet you a soda that Shady gets 100 yards rushing and gets in the end zone twice.
See your soda, and I raise you an alcoholic drink.
We can't even do that.
Oh,
but I'll bet you a beer. Okay.
That's too many rules.
So you're betting against this, though?
No. I think he can have a big game. I do. Against this defense, with the defensive front and the linebackers, I do think that he can have a big game this week because they're just not like we said earlier, with the exception of Gerald McCoy, he's the one guy that, you know, can worry you how fast he gets into the backfield. But, you know, I think they will do a good job of double-teaming him and keeping him, you know, off balance, really chipping him with different guys coming in all types of different directions. I think Shady will have a very good game. I think he'll have one touchdown on the ground, and I think he'll have one in the air, though.
Two. Yeah, that's what I said, two touchdowns.
Did you say that? One in the air?
He'll be in the end zone twice.
All right, cool.
Hey, speaking of running backs, your buddy, Marshawn Lynch. The NFL report today is that Marshawn Lynch is probably going to get a letter from the league office shortly. Ejected in the second quarter last night, ran onto the field and ultimately wound up pushing and grabbing an official. Appeared to be trying to get Kansas City Chiefs cornerback Marcus Peters away from the fray, I guess. He was penalized. Marshawn was ejected from the game because of the contact with the official. We're very fond of Marshawn, and I guess he had reasons for, defending Marcus Peters or whatever he was doing and pulling him away from the fight or keeping him away from his quarterback. You can't run onto the field from the bench, and you certainly cannot make contact with an official. And, Donald, you're not going to want – I have a feeling you won't like this, but Marshawn probably has to sit out for a game because of that, at least one.
You can't
do that.
There's nothing
that excuses that.
You can't just run on the field, and you know the rules. You can't run out there on the field. Now, for me, I get it. If he was protecting his cousin, he went straight at his cousin, so I don't know if he's protecting his cousin, if he's trying to protect his quarterback. I don't know what he was doing out there. He was trying to break up the entire thing. He went to shove the guy and saw he was an official, and it was like, oh, wait, I'm sorry. I didn't know.
You sure? Because
he went to push him, and then he kind of pulled him back like, oh, my fault. I didn't know that was you. And then he went on to Marcus Peters. And I don't fault – if he was going for his cousin – I wouldn't have ran on the field. If I was already on the field, then I probably would have done the same thing. But you can't come off the sidelines and onto the field and get into commotion like that, And so, yeah, he knows the rules. I wouldn't doubt that he would be suspended, which is tough. I wanted to see him come back to Buffalo. I wanted to see him play.
You can't lay hands on the official. I mean, if no matter what the circumstances, no matter who your cousin is, no matter heat of the moment, you just can't.
Yeah.
You can't. It's anarchy if you do.
The rest of what that right there you can't do. But then for him to go and sit up in the stands and watch the game with the fans, that is funny to me. And then the video of him taking the train with his cousin Marcus Peters and these guys just partying on the train is just hilarious to me.
Well, this is why we're fond of Marshawn. I am as well, right?
Yeah.
You play with him.
I'm telling you,
he
truly fits Oakland. He fits the vibe of that city, the stadium, everything. And I think a lot more people around the NFL and fans in general have grown to like Marshawn Lynch. Early in his career, he got in some trouble here in Buffalo. And when he wasn't talking to the media, everybody had their opinions of him. But I think over the years, more and more people have grown to like Marshawn Lynch. With all of that being said, you cannot leave the sideline and go onto the field and try to help someone out.
Ian Rappaport earlier today tweeted out, based on the fine schedule guidelines, Lynch faces a $30,000 fine for contact with a ref and $6,000 for entering a fight area. So what's it, $36,000?
It has been said that Marshawn hasn't spent any of the money that he made in the NFL yet because he's made so much money in endorsements. He's only spent the money from endorsements. He hasn't spent any of his NFL money yet.
Yeah. And which is, again, I wouldn't be surprised if he misses a game or two.
He's going to get fined.
I wouldn't blame the league for doing it.
Right, of course, because you can't have that.
Yeah.
You have to kind of set that precedent. You don't run off the sidelines, And I don't really remember in my years of watching the NFL seeing, one guy run off the sideline. You see it in basketball, where a guy, they've kind of shut that down.
Basketball,
now.
They go out and swing, throw a punch, and then they back up. That's the classic basketball fight.
They throw punches, but then they don't want to connect on the punch.
No.
So it's like a phantom punch, and then they back up.
It's crazy. All right, more to come. We're going to talk more about the Bills and the Bucks. You're welcome to join us at 803-0550 and toll-free from outside Buffalo at 1-888-550-2550. More coming up from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones live from One Bills Drive. Got a special guest coming up after the top of the hour. Moose, Daryl Johnston from Fox Sports in town to do the game. Mm-hmm. Lewiston Porter native, Syracuse standout. Good guy, all-around good guy.
Everybody's from this area.
Everybody is from Buffalo,
in the media,
Donald.
In the media.
Yeah. You know who else is from this area? I was just coming across this. Starting center for the Tampa Bay Bucks. You know the name Ali Marpet?
No.
He's a second-round pick from a couple of years ago from Hobart College, which is right down the road, 100 miles away in Geneva, New York. I was just there last week, actually, when I was in
the Hobart.
Yeah, driving around Hobart. It's a beautiful college right on the shores of Seneca Lake.
What are you, just randomly out there? I mean,
yeah, I was in the Finger Lakes. Geneva is one of my favorite places, and Hobart in particular. It's a classic upstate New York college. Leaves are turning. You know, there was like, I think there was a women's soccer game going on. It was just a great place. But
did you watch the soccer game?
No. But Allie, no. But Allie Marpet played there, and he's coming here to play. He's never been to a game in Buffalo. He said he's got a large couple of busloads of fans and friends from Geneva, from Hobart, coming up, including the school president, Greg Vincent, the college president.
Let me tell you, you are the man at the school if you can get your school president to come see you play.
Well, Allie Marpet, who is the first player from Hobart to play a second-round pick, the first NFL draft pick ever from Hobart, Division III school. He's the first Hobart player to play in an NFL game since 1937.
Man.
80 years ago.
Definitely. Is he a Bills fan? Was he a Bills fan?
I don't think so. He's from somewhere, I believe, in upstate New York, like around Westchester area, Allie Marpet.
Okay.
Fred King played in one game with the Brooklyn Dodgers of the NFL in 1937.
Jeez.
Last guy from – I'm reading this.
Let me see if I can get Jim Tressel to come in.
Good luck with that. Yeah, watch you work. But it's cool. It's a cool story. Allie Marpet,
come watch me work.
Second round pick from Hobart a couple of years ago. I got busloads coming from Geneva. It's kind of cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, Division III school. You can identify with that.
No, I can't. No, I cannot.
Moose Johnston coming up, the Lewiston Porter standout, Syracuse standout. Of course, won Super Bowls with the Dallas Cowboys here in town to cover the game for Fox, the NFL on Fox on Sunday. He's coming up in the next hour along with Lorenzo Alexander in the lowdown. So come on back. The John Murphy Show with Donald Jones, live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. The update from One Bills Drive, where everyone's getting set for the Bills and the Bucks, and the injury updates are critical today. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers say they will have Jameis Winston in the starting lineup to play the Bills on Sunday. The announcement from head coach Dirk Cutter after practice today. Winston didn't throw much at all on Wednesday or Thursday this week, but got in some throws today, and Jameis Winston is set to start against the Bills on Sunday. For the Bills, their injury report is out. Charles Clay, Ramon Humber, both ruled out of the game. Wide receiver Jordan Matthews listed as questionable with his thumb, and Matthews got on a full practice day today. Head coach Sean McDermott said earlier today they will wait and see as to Jordan Matthews' availability Sunday and how much he is used against the Bucks. Bills and Bucks Sunday, 1 o'clock pregame coverage begins at 11 a.m. on the network, on the Bills Radio Network, and including our flagship here in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. Marshawn Lynch ejected from the Oakland Raiders' win over Kansas City in the second quarter last night, and league officials say there's a chance that he will be disciplined for that. A fine or suspension may be coming Marshawn Lynch's way. Buffalo Sabres back home tonight. They've got the Vancouver Canucks. First game back after the four-game road trip. The home team in the series has won 12 of the last 15 games. They're playing tonight at KeyBank Center, the Sabres and the Vancouver Canucks. Baseball tonight, the Yankees go up in Game 6 in Houston now. That series returns to Houston. The Astros undefeated at home this postseason. The Yankees have won 3 in a row at Yankee Stadium. It is Game 6. Yankees up 3-2. First pitch tonight a little bit after 8 o'clock. And awaiting the Yankees and Astros are the Los Angeles Dodgers, who scored an 11-1 victory in Game 5 of their National League Championship Series. Game 1 of the Best of 7 World Series will be next Tuesday night at Dodger Stadium. That's the update from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones, Lorenzo Alexander with a lowdown coming up, but a special guest in studio with us right now, a homecoming of sorts for the NFL on Fox's very own Moose, Daryl Johnston, Lewiston Porter product. Welcome home, Moose. We don't see you a lot here, but when you come in, it always feels kind of special when your crew is in here.
Yeah, it is fun. It's good to get back, and we don't get back here as often as I would like. It's great to come back and see family, but it's been a nice run here. We've gotten back a couple times the last few years.
First things first, can you do us a favor and put up the ring? So we can zone in on the ring here. You know, we're not used to this here in Buffalo.
This is Pittsburgh. This is not either one of the Buffalo Super Bowls.
All right. I don't
do that. So that's Super Bowl 30. That's Pittsburgh.
So you're not rubbing it in anybody's
Absolutely
face.
Not. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I tell everybody when I come back, I said, listen, I was cheering for the Bills against the Giants and against the Redskins, which I normally don't do. I was always an NFC East guy. But I know how special it would be for the Bills fans in this community to have had a Super Bowl during that run. So I was pulling for him as much as everybody back here in Buffalo.
You were in position to help the Bills a couple of times.
Yeah, the other two, I had some other agendas.
Yes, you did, and did it quite well, as a matter of fact. It's been a while since you played. I just wonder, as you reflect back on your NFL career, I want to talk about college in a second, but the Super Bowl is obviously the highlights, and you played in a unique spot, a fullback position, yeah. Which sort of falls in and out of fashion in the NFL these days, doesn't it?
It really does. We've had several teams that don't even have the fullback on the roster spot,
right.
So it's been challenging from that regard. But I think what you have here, you see Patrick DeMarco come in. I think it adds an element to. We had San Francisco last weekend against Washington, and one of the first moves that Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch made was to go out and get a fullback. They got Kyle Juszczyk.
Yeah.
So I think from time to time, it does kind of swing back into favor. There were some dark days between 07 and 12 where a lot of teams had really found that three wide, two tight end set to be more productive. We're starting to see it come back a little bit, and I think a lot of that has to do with the really unique athlete that's inside,
yeah.
That defensive tackle that can beat a lineman real quick. To have that extra guy in the backfield just to kind of clean that up and allow the running back to get back to the line of scrimmage without having to make him a move in the backfield is important.
Now, what about the H-back type of, position? Instead of a true fullback, do you see teams now doing a lot more H-back where it's a tight end slash fullback?
Yeah, I see the H-back that's a tight end that you're trying to bring into the backfield. I've mm-hmm. seen converted outside linebackers. I've even seen converted defensive tackles that were undersized try to
yeah.
come into that position. And it's hard. It's a mentality. You've got a skill set to play the fullback position, but it's more of a mentality position. So I used to struggle when I would go up to the line of scrimmage, even if I was on the backside on the line of scrimmage. Because the blocking on the line of scrimmage is more technically driven, so it's hand placement and who gets their hands inside first. Right. Where fullback, when you're coming out of the backfield, it's going to be a collision.
Oh.
So it's
yeah.
just, you have to have that mentality. So I struggled, when I played on the line from time to time.
Youngstown's own Daryl Johnson in studio with us here with the NFL on Fox crew. Chris Myers and Daryl and Laura Oakman will have the call of the game on TV, the Bills and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. What do you think of Patrick DeMarco as a player, and how important is he to whatever success the Bills might have in their rushing game?
Well, I think he was very good in Atlanta.
Yeah.
I became a fan of his in Atlanta. I think he brings a unique skill set to the fullback position. I think when you have a guy that can be in the backfield and be a lead blocker for LeSean McCoy and be involved in the running game in that aspect, but then also to be able to leave formation and create a matchup situation on the outside, that is the type of player that we're looking for to bring the fullback position back into favor in the NFL. The problem is we don't have that pipeline from high school to college. The fullback doesn't mm-hmm. exist down at those levels,
right.
So it's hard for him to exist at this level, and then we get into the H-back
right,
and
right.
the converted defensive player trying to fit that role.
Tell me about LeSean McCoy, and we're going into Game 6. He hasn't hit the end zone yet.
Yeah,
I went on the air a minute ago and told Donald I almost bet him $5 he was going to get the end zone twice.
Did. I think we ended up.
I think we did bet.
You got it to two?
not on money though. We ended up
on
a beer maybe.
Maybe, but he's waiting to break out. I know he's frustrated. He's handled it pretty well. I have a feeling this will be the game for him. This will be the game for him and the entire Bills running game.
We really sensed a lot of confidence from not only LeSean, but from Eric Wood, from Tyrod Taylor. It seems as though they had a really productive meeting during the course of the bye week. The people that were involved in the running game really had a productive meeting. And that's a credit to Sean McDermott for allowing that kind of dialogue to happen, to create that kind of atmosphere in the locker room where there is an open door policy. Some people say that, but it doesn't really exist. And we talked to the guys who were involved in the running game. They said that not only did they listen to us and what we were trying to express, but we also learned from them. So I think you're going to find that you get a nice little blend of what they want to do. And it'll be interesting to see if they get that production, because you sense that LeSean was very confident this week, just from some of the quotes in the newspaper, about what the potential of this offense was going to be coming off that bye. So, when you have a bye early in the season, sometimes it's hard to have that body of work that allows you to do a little bit of a self-scout and find out where you can get better, what areas you're doing well in, but where do we need to work at it? And I think that that Sean McDermott and his staff were very good during the course of the bye week. Sounds they found out some really good information on the team.
They over the last couple of games, they sprinkled in elements of a more power rushing attack as opposed to kind of the wide zone blocking scheme they were trying to use. And I have a feeling this is what you're talking about, right? They're going to kind of incorporate maybe a little bit more of that moving forward. And
yeah.
After the dialogue they've had.
Well, I think everybody wants – you have to play to the strength of your players.
Right.
So, that's the number one thing. We had Washington last week. And what I've always liked about Washington Washington is what Bill Callahan does, the offensive line coach down there who kind of builds that running game, and he was in Dallas for a while. They do all of it. You know, you've got the inside zone, the outside zone. You've got man schemes, power schemes, down blocks, guys around. So you see the counter. You see the counter tray. You see a lot of things. And for defenses, that really – those are two different styles. So now you don't know what's coming, so you've got to play it so differently, where if it's a zone, you're kind of moving down that line and trying to keep your gaps clean. The man scheme, the offense is trying to punch a hole in your front, so you have to attack that in a different style. So I like what Washington does. I'd like to see more teams around the NFL incorporate what Bill Callahan has done, and it sounds like Buffalo is kind of moving down that path.
Daryl Moose Johnson in studio with us, three-time Super Bowl champion, 11 years in the NFL with the Dallas Cowboys, Western New York native. The word came out an hour or two ago that Jameis Winston is good to go. Probably not shocking, but how effective could he be with a limited practice week and, you know, just the AC injury just a couple of days ago, a week ago?
Well, everything that came out of Tampa this week is it's not anything where he can do more damage. So, number one, it's the health of the player moving forward. So head coach Dirk Cutter was real emphatic about the fact that Jameis can't hurt the shoulder anymore. Now, if he falls on top of it again, you know, obviously the size of these guys, we saw what happened to Aaron Rodgers. Anything can happen during the course of the game. But just I think from just playing the game, he doesn't put himself at risk for re-injuring that shoulder. But similar to what's happened to LeSean McCoy, not having scored a touchdown through five games for the first time in his career, Jameis Winston has never missed a game in his career at any level. So you're going to have that desire to be on the field. So the biggest thing going after one, can he play? Is he going to be healthy? Can this do anything long term? Okay, that's fine. Okay, now what's the velocity on the ball? Can he make the throws? Right. You don't want somebody out there who's not going to be able to contribute to the game plan. So I had heard that supposedly he threw a football at the group of reporters as they came on the field just to show they had the zip on the football. So they're in a very good position. If something does happen to Jameis and he can't go, I mean, everybody here in Buffalo is very familiar with Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Sure.
There's not many teams in the NFL that can sport a 1-2 quarterback combination like Tampa Bay can right now. So if something was to happen, you always have to be wary of Ryan Fitzpatrick coming off the bench.
Now, I think we're coming into this transition period of quarterbacks in the league where you have the top guys, Brady, Breeze, Rodgers, all of these guys in their last couple of years playing in the NFL, and you have a young crop of quarterbacks like Carr, Winston, Andrew Luck, these guys, Mariota, who are now coming up. Where do you see Jameis Winston amongst that young group? Has he grown into being, well, this guy can be an elite quarterback?
Statistically, he's going to have the opportunity to do some very unique things because he started from day one, and it's been a downfield throwing game in Tampa Bay. So you're talking about numbers, you know, in the marina, you know, area where you're talking about the start of a career. So obviously you're going to be off to a great start. You've seen him start to grow and mature a little bit. Kind of hold down those emotions. I think when he came into the league that rookie year, he was a very emotional player, and he could be a little bit up and down. And I think that, you know, Dirk Cutter working with him and the other offensive coaches have got him to kind of focus that emotion, that passion for the game in a more positive way, so it has positive impacts. I think you've seen respect for the possession. I think that's a huge thing for the younger guys. They still have that bravado that they can make every throw, and the guys at this level are really, really good at baiting you, you know, showing you things that aren't really exactly what you're seeing. And allowing you to throw in areas where they can take the ball away. That's one of the areas. I think he had 15 interceptions his first year. He had 18 interceptions his second year. He's off to a much better start this year, you know, making sure he takes care of the football. That's the number one thing, you know, for a young quarterback coming into the league. So when you talk about this whole group of the guys that you mentioned, I think I'm going to throw in Dak Prescott into that well, you know, kind of this transition into the next generation of quarterbacks that will be in the league. Carson Wentz out of Philadelphia. You know, it's going to be fun to watch him. But they all need help around them. And, you know, some of the guys that we're saying goodbye to, I don't know if they did. I mean, Tom Brady seems like he can put anybody around him, and he finds a way to win. Drew Brees, New Orleans has never struggled as an offense. They've struggled defensively, but anybody you put around Drew Brees, you know, he can do some pretty special things. So we're getting ready to lose some really elite quarterbacks when you talk about the history of the game. So there's a lot of pressure on this next generation for some of those guys to come through and replace those great quarterbacks that we're going to lose.
Daryl, you and your Fox crew, you've had 6 weeks now broadcasting NFL games. Who's the best team in the league you've seen so far?
We had Philadelphia,
and
Philadelphia was impressive. We had them against Arizona. It was 21-0 at the end of the first quarter. And you talk about getting off to a quick start, and you talk about doing certain things when you have our production meetings on Fridays and Saturdays. They definitely did exactly what they had planned to do. We'd had Arizona That was the third time we'd had Arizona, all on the East Coast. You know, they were in Detroit, in Indy, now in Philadelphia. They've struggled with that East Coast trip the last couple of seasons. So you don't know exactly where Philadelphia sits, but I was really impressed because they look like a complete team. They have a very good offensive line. They can run the ball very effectively. You know, their passing game is growing. You know, it's kind of similar to what Buffalo has here. You have Nelson Aguilar and you have Alshon Jeffrey, but they're new and they're, you know, kind of trying to hit their strides. Maybe some more name recognition than you have here with the group in Buffalo. But there's several teams that are kind of going through this wide receiver growth with younger quarterbacks. But I was very impressed with Carson Wentz. And then I think where Philly kind of gets the edge over some of the other teams we've seen is being a complete team. They have excellent special teams, and their defense played really, really well against Arizona. So, you know, we kind of walked away from that game saying, wow, this is one of the benchmark teams we've seen.
Darryl Johnson, our guest. Before we let you go, you were obviously an All-American at Syracuse and all Big East several years at SU. Many of us here obviously follow Syracuse, and some of us are alums. And all of us, I think, were deeply saddened this past summer when Coach Mack passed away, Dick McPherson, yeah. Who I know was really instrumental in getting you to Syracuse and kind of nurturing your career along.
He really was, and a lot of guys here in the Western New York area that were instrumental in me even getting that opportunity down there. Fred McAmer was yep. tremendous in continuing to put my name down there. Dick Byers, Ilio DiPaolo were very, very important in getting me recognition and getting my name in front of the staff down at Syracuse. And, you know, as time has passed, I've found out how I ended up being there, and I was literally – the last scholarship offered that year. And there was somebody who had verbally committed to Syracuse who changed his mind late in the game. And because of the efforts of Fred McAmer and Ilio DiPaolo and Dick Byers, my name was fresh there. So they basically decided, let's go after a Western New York kid. Let's get a hometown kid and get him down here and get the western part of the state excited about what we're doing here at Syracuse University. So number one, just very grateful to those guys who were instrumental in giving me the opportunity. And then Dick McPherson, and I said this on a tweet when he passed away, he believed in me before I believed in myself. Hmm. And it was hard. You get down there and you come from a small, you know, suburban area.
Oh, yeah.
And,
I mean,
yeah, yeah. And, not, you know, not a football mecca by yeah. any means. I got down to Syracuse University, and I felt a little overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And it was through Dick McPherson. And then a couple of years later, a coach named Jim Hoffer, yeah. Who was here with the University of UB. Buffalo, it was probably the most important person to cross paths with in my life to get me to the point where I am right now. So it was a very sad day. It was a very sad day. But I'm blessed. My son plays lacrosse in Texas, and he'd gotten on Syracuse's radar. So we were coming up for some recruiting trips mm-hmm. and doing some camps. And I actually had an opportunity to visit with Coach McPherson 2 weeks before he passed away.
Wow.
So, you know, what my son was doing afforded me the opportunity to come up to Syracuse and have the blessing to be able to see Mac before he passed away.
Thanks for this, Darryl. I know you've been at a busy day with the production meetings and stuff. I think you're going to have a heck of a game to call.
I do too. I really do. I think that this is going to be one of those games that a lot of people will look at the matchup and not think a whole lot about it, but I think we got a great game here. We're really excited. Our crew is really excited to be here in Buffalo for this game this weekend.
Have a great broadcast.
Thank you very much, John. Good to see you.
Darryl Johnson in studio with us. He'll be on the Fox call of the game with Chris Myers and Laura Oakman, 1 o'clock on Sunday. Donald and I back with more in a moment. Lorenzo Alexander still to come. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. From One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show, John Murphy and Donald Jones. It's good to have Darryl Johnson and a special guest just pop. It's been a big week for the pop-ins, the drop-ins with the with Michael Vick
some
the other
cameos,
day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
I like it too.
You know?
I like it too.
It throws, you know, it kind of keeps you on your toes. Oh, who's walking through the door now? Right?
Yeah. We're big time. Didn't happen like that until I came on set, you know?
Well, actually, Donald, I have known Darryl Moose. I went to a Syracuse alumni Buffalo banquet. So he went to Syracuse. This had to be mid 80s. He was just getting out of Lewiston Porter High School. And he was like, you know, he was a recruit still. And he was there with his parents, who he said his parents are still doing well up there in Youngstown. But that's when I met him. He was like a 17-year-old kid. You know, the point is, I've known Dale Johnson for a long time, and he's always been a good guy, and he's a really talented broadcaster, by the way, as well.
As he taught, and I could be wrong on this. I truly could be wrong on this, but I believe he was a recruit at the same time as my mentor, Eugene Napoleon. And Eugene Napoleon verbally committed to Syracuse and then decommitted and ended up going to Pitt.
Huh.
So when he said that, it made me wonder, was that
a one-for-one?
Yeah. I don't know. But I know Eugene, because I talked to Eugene about the coach when he
coach
died.
McPherson.
Coach McPherson. Yeah.
What did he say?
And he was like, he was a great man, you know, when he recruited me, and he tried so hard to get me here, and I was going to go. And then I ended up, you know, decommitting and going to Pitt. And then he ended up transferring from Pitt to West Virginia. But nonetheless, I think that was a one-for-one.
I bet that was.
Yeah. I wonder if he would know that. I'm going to have to call him later on and see.
Moose Johnson, we thank him for joining us, taking a couple of minutes out to join us. And I think he's, I got the sense from Daryl Johnson that he kind of sees the same thing that I have sensed this week, that this Buffalo offense is ready to break out, and this is probably the right opponent to do that against, right?
I think
Moose is talking about, meeting and kind of a back-and-forth dialogue between the Bills, running backs and the offensive line and the coaching staff. I'm sure that happens. I think that's probably pretty regular course of action. But I do get the sense that if you're paying attention here, pay attention this week. I know it's the – and he said it too. Look, on anybody's radar, if you're looking at the NFL, what are the big games this week, Bucks and Bills? This game means something to both of these franchises, but especially, I think, to the Bills and whatever hopes they may harbor of contending or being relevant, up there near the top of the league this year.
Right, and, the Bucks are in the same boat because that NFC South right now is still in, Carolina is on top of that thing, but the Bucks are still in it in the NFC South. So they're still in position where they're like, okay, we can go into Buffalo, steal one out there, and we'll make sure that we remain in this race for the playoffs. And so, this is a big game, you can tell in talking to him as he met with some of the players today in their production meetings, he can feel the excitement that these players have coming out of this bye week.
Right.
And, the players understand that they have not played well, especially on the offensive side of the ball, that they haven't played well this year, but they went into a bye week. They had all these different meetings, and he talked about the open dialogue and things like that. And now it seems like, maybe they'll do some, sprinkle some different things in there, and these guys feel excited about the game plan that they have going into this week.
What do you think about this game, this matchup? Lorenzo Alexander is going to join us for his lowdown on the Bills and the Bucks. In the meantime, let's hear from you. Lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Our Twitter poll today deals with this matchup, and we want to know from you, what's the key to a Buffalo victory? Donald and I have gone through our keys. I think a lot of it has to do with the offensive line. A lot of it has to do with getting the running game going. What do you think are the keys? You can vote on Twitter. As we look at the Twitter poll, you can see that most folks, 60% or thereabouts, most people believe that the key to a Buffalo victory this Sunday is getting the run game going. 19% say better offensive play. 14% say handling Tampa Bay's offensive weapons. 6% say something else. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The Bucs' offensive weapons include Michael Evans. They include DeSean Jackson. They include the tight end Brate that everybody's in love with. And the Bills have to counter with, the rookie cornerback, Tre'Davious White, coming off a game in which he really gave himself low grades for his performance against Cincinnati. I like the way he bounced back. Today, Sean McDermott was asked about Tre'Davious White, about his confidence level, and McDermott said that, as far as he's concerned, he has lost no confidence at all in Buffalo's first-round draft pick.
Well, my confidence in Tre'Davious has not wavered. I'm not sure really if that's where you're going, or his confidence for himself. Yeah, I mean, he's a confident young man. He's played a lot of big-time football in the SEC, and that was part of the evaluation process. And the mental toughness part of it is huge. And also playing in this league, that you've got to have a short memory and learn from things, and I think we've seen that, and then move forward and use it to your advantage. I could say that, we've probably seen that in, I believe it was a Denver game, and then also the Cincinnati game as well.
I'm in line with that. I don't worry about Tre'Davious White. I don't worry about his confidence. I mean, I don't worry about his level of play.
He's shown signs throughout the course of a game to have a bad play and bounce back. And if you do that, like if he had a horrible play or two plays early in the game, and then all of a sudden you start to see more and more and more, then you will worry, you know, because he is the team's number one corner right now. But he has bounced back. Every time that he's had a rough, you know, start to a game, he's bounced back in like the second half. And so you have to have nothing but confidence that he's going to be okay throughout the course of this season and throughout the course of the rest of his career.
And it's
he's
not
like
as,
still a rookie.
It's not as if the Bills and Tre'Davious have not faced premier wide receivers. They have. So
oh
far,
gosh.
They caught a break when Julio Jones left the game in Atlanta, but Calvin Benjamin, pretty good wide receiver. A.J. Green had his moments, but it's not like they've not been playing
Emmanuel
against good
Sanders
wide receivers.
And Demaryius Thomas.
Yeah.
They faced some good ones, you know. This week is nothing different than what he's already seen. It's not like, oh, this is going to be the first elite receiver. No, he's faced them already this year, and those guys have had their good plays. He's had his good plays, you know, and that's what happens. You're facing elite, elite wide receivers. This year, he has faced some of the best wide receivers in the game today.
Yeah.
And he's had his good plays. They've had their good plays. Those guys get paid a lot of money for a reason because they are some of the best. And so the best corners in the NFL will give up some plays every now and then.
A couple of calls on this game. Let's go to Butch in Buffalo. Butch, your thoughts on this matchup and the Bills so far. What do you think?
John and Donald, this is an honor and pleasure to talk to you. Great show as always. I just really want to get into it as far as the keys, as far as the way I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Buffalo Bills and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this Sunday. The offensive line. I'm just going to just cut right to the chase. Eric Woods, I mean, last year when he got injured, and I was sorry that he got hurt, but the guy who replaced him did outstanding. And our run game was pushing forward. And then when Eric came back, it was a possibility that they didn't know Eric was going to get his job back right away, which he did. And Eric's a great guy, probably a great teammate. But I really believe Eric Wood and Richie Incognito, those days are over. I mean, Richie's not pushing it like he used to be. He's 30-something years old. The defensive coordinators and these defensive linemen have caught on to him. He's not pushing the pocket. If you ask me, with the exception of the right tackle, Richie Incognito is the weakest link besides the right tackle on our offensive line. And if we can get that together and then somehow patch it up and maybe get a little passing game going, I think we could pull out a win.
Okay, thanks very much, Butch. We appreciate that. I agree with you. The offensive line needs to play better. I don't agree with everything you've stated there, but I agree with much of what you said about the offensive line. Chris Brown had a chance to meet and greet with head coach Sean McDermott. They do it every week. Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons Cafe and Bake Shop.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons. I'm Chris Brown, along with Bills head coach Sean McDermott, as the Bills get ready to host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Sunday at New Era Field. Coach, thanks for being with us. So coming out of the bye week, you guys get the benefit of an extra practice, albeit abbreviated, on Monday. Where do you feel that best serves your team coming off of that bye, even if it's just a little bit more extra practice than a regular game week?
Well, obviously the rest helps out immensely at this point in the season. Also, you know, we're able to come in a little bit more relaxed type of approach on an extra day, as you mentioned. Get a little bit of a quick rinse practice-wise, get them out there running, make sure they're hydrated, and get them back into the routine at this point.
Offensive coordinator Rick Dennison, along with the rest of your staff, hard at work kind of dissecting the positives and the negatives in the bye week. And in talking to him this week, he was saying that the negative plays are what he's trying to cut out of the offensive performance. He just felt there was a few too many. He believes they're easily correctable through technique. My question to you is that an entire unit thing, or did you guys find it's a player here or there that maybe not executing their assignment to the letter, and that's why maybe some of those negative plays are happening?
Well, this game is about each of us doing our job, and unfortunately, all it takes is for one person not to do their job, and then we have a negative play, which is we've had too many, to coach's point, which has created some third and long,
right,
or longer than what we hoped for situations. So we've got to improve in that area.
And then looking at Tampa Bay, a lot of weapons on offense. When you have all those weapons to account for, do you just pick what you feel is the most dangerous one, or do you try to cover all the bases? I'm just kind of curious, in a general sense, how you take a look at that when you're trying to get ready for an opponent like that.
Well, they do have multiple weapons and speed, length. So they've obviously put forth a lot of money into these weapons, and so we have to pick our spots. We have to be smart, fundamentally sound, and then also understand situational football.
All right, very good. Now it's time for our fan question of the week, where you, the fan, get to ask Coach a question. We go out to our own Lauren Hall, who is out at a local Tim Hortons and has this week's fan question for Coach.
Hey, Chris, we're at the Tim Hortons in Orchard Park, right across from New Era Field, and we're with Fred. Fred, what's your question for Coach?
Hey, Coach, other than wrestling, what are your favorite hobbies?
All right, Coach, I know you don't have a lot of extra time, but other than wrestling, what do you got for us?
Well, you know, I do enjoy wrestling, but the other part I like about my off time, my free time, is spending time with my family and really just being a fan instead of a coach. It's fun to go to my kids' activities and their sports and sit back and maybe critique their coach and second-guess him or her as well. So, no, it's a lot of fun spending time with my family, and I just enjoy doing that.
All right, Coach, good enough. Good luck getting a win here at home this Sunday.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, that's Bills head coach Sean McDermott. This has been Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week.
Coffee with the Coach, a regular Friday feature here on the show. Another regular Friday feature, our regular guest appearance from Buffalo Bills linebacker Lorenzo Alexander. We call it the lowdown as we bring in every Friday. Thanks for coming by. And I know we made you wait a couple of minutes.
Yeah. It's okay. I mean, we had, you know, Daryl Johnson here, the Moose, one of the greatest fullbacks ever to play this game. You know, so I could sit behind him any day of the week.
You heard you were acting just a bit of a prima donna out there.
No, well, I was trying to be professional, and I know this is this ship is ran professionally. You know, playoff caliber is throughout the entire building.
Right.
Exactly. So it's nothing prima donna. When I'm just making sure that in the future, if we know that it's going to be pushed back, just to let me know because I have things I have to get done. So that's all I was just. That's all I was doing.
I
just
love
being trying to be a professional.
I love it. Donald. I do. I love it.
Just leave it there. I'm being professional.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
I was raised right.
Man. I just love when you dress down Donald.
Yeah.
Because he won't listen to me.
Here's the thing.
Right.
You were just watching that Coffee with the Coach.
Yeah.
And you heard Coach McDermott say how he will critique his kids' coaches.
Right.
Now, you have kids. You have
– Yeah, I'm not that dad.
You're not going to be that dad?
I'm not that dad. My kids play soccer and stuff now. I've been a coach, and I know how hard it is to coach.
Yeah.
Especially at the little league level. It's way worse than being a professional head coach because those parents are right next to you, and they don't care to get out of hand because you're dealing with their babies. But I'm a guy that just sits back, and when I coach, I coach my kids just more about effort, just, you know, doing things the right way. But I let the coach pretty much – do his thing and leave him in his space because that can be intimidating too, right? You know, you have a head coach or a professional player that's out there, you know, so I don't ever want to put them in a situation where it seems like I know more and now the kids may be listening to me and not him.
You'll see Lorenzo on the news one day going off on some parents and some coaches. Hey, man, what are you?
People with their cell phones will be shooting.
Parents are crazy. These parents and coaches at the Little League level.
It's bad. It's really real bad.
Lorenzo's here for the lowdown. Let's dig right into it, and let's talk about coming out of the bye weekend, and that is your first topic in the lowdown, right? You think it's important that you play with urgency?
Yes, it's an urgency. I mean, we've had that since the beginning of the season, but when you come out of a bye week after you had a little bit of R&R, sometimes you can kind of just ooze your way back into playing football with that off week. You can kind of trick your body like you haven't been doing anything for a while. So this at the beginning of the week, just really emphasizing having good, crisp practices, making sure we come out and execute well, playing fast, playing physical, because you can't like restart. You're not starting at week one. You know, teams played last week. They continue to get better. And we have to kind of relaunch our season right where we left off, not taking a step back at all.
What did you guys cover in last week? Since you practiced last week, and then you practice Monday. What were those practices like?
Really just kind of a review of some of the plays or situations that may have came up that have given us a little bit of an issue. Mm-hmm. And just kind of going over those, revisiting those, getting back to some of the fundamentals and baselines of things. Just to kind of just revisit and go over them, just kind of get a little refresher. And got a little bit of Tampa Bay in there, but nothing too much. And then, you know, got a lot of relaxation as well.
Were they good practices this week? I mean, did you feel like you were getting work?
Yeah, they were crisp. I mean, I think guys, I think that was the key is guys addressed it early. I mean, Kyle Williams always does a great job. Sean McDermott did a great job as well of just emphasizing. And oftentimes after a bye week, you come back happy, ready to get back after it, and then you come out and have a poor game, and then you want to say something. Yeah. Oh, we didn't do this. I mean, well, it's too late now. Why we didn't say nothing early? So I think we did a great job early in the week addressing those things, and we came out and had a crisp week of practice.
Your number one lowdown, have urgency out of the bye, and you also, and number two, want to talk about establishing a rhythm on offense and doing it early, which would denote a sense of urgency.
Yeah, you know, obviously we want to continue to get better offensively, you know, talking to those guys, and it's really all about staying ahead of the chains. I think a lot of times when you watch our games, we have some good plays, but whether it's a penalty or something that we do that kind of bites ourselves in the foot, and then now we're starting first and 20. So just seeing those guys come out, we had a great week of practice, and just staying ahead of the chains, getting Shady going, and then, you know, obviously moving the pocket for Tyrod and getting some of those balls down the field and just staying on a good rhythm, get some confidence going, and going out there and just kind of really establish themselves offensively, things that we know they're capable of doing.
And number three on the lowdown, it's just a physicality on defense you want to establish?
Yeah, we want to go out there and be physical with these guys and constantly hit them. Anytime, obviously the run game speaks for itself. You want to go out there and be dominant with them and really snuff that run early. This offensive coordinator has a history of abandoning the run very quickly, especially if you go out there and knock it out. I'm just talking to some guys that have been around him and have played for him. But more so on the outside, when you have a guy like DeSean Jackson that is a track star, even at you know the age, I don't think he's like 30 or so now, he can still go out there and run. You want to make this game a physical game for him. You want to be able to jam him. When he catches the ball, you hit him because he's always a guy that's trying to get out of bounds, get on the ground. Mm-hmm. So if you can hit those guys and Mike Evans as well, early and often, jam and be in their face, those guys tend to kind of fade away if you can have a physical presence the entire game.
You talk about the run game and being physical in the run game. Doug Martin seems to be coming into his own now, coming back off the suspension. What have you seen out of him the last couple of weeks?
I mean, he's the same guy, a great running back, short, stout, a guy that doesn't necessarily want to get up on the outside but make that one cut, get up in there. Mm-hmm. He may run you over, may make you miss. But he's a solid back on first and second down. And then, obviously, Jacquez is really good as well. Yeah. Rogers does a great job. And number 34, I can't think of his last name right now, but he does a great job on third downs in the screen game, picking up blitzes. So they have a plethora of backs that they're using and rotating in and out. And so we have to definitely understand each one's strengths and weaknesses, but really just being dominant on first and second down and really making sure we hit him because he hasn't really gotten to his rhythm quite yet either. Right, it's only like his second game, I think, back.
Mm-hmm. The word came out a couple hours ago that Jameis Winston is going to be the guy at quarterback. Did you anticipate that would be the case?
I did. I know Jameis a little bit. Obviously, everybody sees him, you know, on TV when he's at Florida State and some of the hard knock stuff, and you kind of get a sense of who he is, his competitive nature. And he had to be pretty much ruled out for him not to play. He's a competitor. Talking to our training staff, quarterbacks have played with this injury in the past. And if you have the capable of playing and you know the type of guy you're dealing with and he's a warrior, you know he's going to be out there. So in my mind, it was going to be him the whole week.
Renzo, we talked to you about the bye week. And after you came back on Tuesday this past week, actually we had you on the show for a little bit Tuesday, about the pretty unprecedented day of community service done by you and, 40 of your teammates all over Western – where you went to the Father Bell Center, I think, right?
Yeah, I went to the Bell Center, downtown Buffalo. It was great. You know, it was just a great way to kind of give back and take action, you know, from all this protesting, you know, and kind of start moving forward, you know. I think after having those meetings with Ken Pegula, I think two or three weeks ago, they heard what we were trying to say. Throughout those conversations and were very supportive and great things came out of it. Obviously the day we're talking about Tuesday and eventually the town hall meeting. And since we felt like we were being heard, you saw in the Cincinnati game, nobody kneeled. I mean, everybody stood up because we're making progress in the areas that we feel most passionate about. And I think as long as we keep this open dialogue and continue to move in this fashion, I don't see guys on our team, at least, to kneel at all.
You don't think in the future that'll happen at all anymore? Neither?
Unless something – I can't predict the future. So, you know, if our president or something happens that's just out of pocket and we feel that we need to protest again, maybe. But, I mean, the way things are moving now, I would say no. But I can't tell you if something happens. I just can't.
Right.
You know, I wish I could.
I like the way – I think it was a week ago, the statement that you released that kind of set up Tuesday's day of service – when you talked about the protests, we're not a protest against military or against the flag.
Right. Really, or police officers.
Police officers, nothing to do with that.
Yeah, yeah. It's just certain things that are happening in our culture that we don't like. and we need to use our platform to have a voice. Now, I understand everybody doesn't like the platform that we're using, but I think if the things that are happening in the black community and some of the community that these individuals are from were happening in your community, you would feel a certain way about it as well. So that's where it comes to having open dialogue and conversations where I bring you into my world and how I grew up, and you can maybe come down to the Bell Center and hang out with these kids and see what some of the things that they're struggling with. And you at least have a understanding and a little bit of sympathy for what the community is going through, right? And the same thing with police officers. I'm not naive to the fact that they make hard and tough decisions, and that sometimes things are going to happen where it was a split situation and they made a decision and defending their life, they shot somebody. And it could have been completely wrong, but because of the situation they're dealing with, I understand it. But some of these videos that we're watching,
right. People
running away, people, you know, cooperating and still getting shot is something going on.
Sure.
So I think that's where a lot of the anger and stuff, at least from my perspective, comes from. And again, it's all about, you know, talking about it. How can we change that? How can we help these officers make better decisions by bringing, you know, more diversity, different legislation, maybe different training? And I've actually done one of those training situations, and some of the players have as well in the past. And it's hard. I mean, I can only imagine. What, you know, you're worried police about your life and going home to your family, and something happens, and it's, oh man, he didn't even have a gun. That wasn't even a gun. It was his wallet or whatever it may have been. So it's just, you know, something that's ongoing. It's never going to be perfect, but we want to make sure that we're just moving in the right direction culturally for everybody.
First step down that path with the Tuesday visits, and how do you follow up? We talked about this a little bit Tuesday. You got to make sure it's not just a one-day feel-good,
and
now it's over.
Yeah, right. And talking to the guys, a lot of guys really enjoyed it and started building a relationship with those centers. The Matt Urban Center was another one. I think we had some other kids at Northeast Community Center as well. The PAC Activities League. So we had guys all around the city that started developing relationships that have already told me that they want to go back. Now, what that looks like, I don't know. It's going to be probably on an individual basis. Right. But at least we planted that seed and started building those relationships. And a lot of other great things came out of it, too. You know, I met an official from the mayor's office. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to connect with him. Somebody else, Marlon, who's our player director, met with the chief of police of OP, and he's going to create a group where we can meet with all the chief of police in the area and kind of sit down and talk. So there was a lot more than just, you know, obviously giving back, but we also made some great connections to help on the other end as well.
You know, I think it should also be talked about that players have always been doing things like this.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not the first time that players have got – I think it's a good thing that you have – not just the players, you know, you have the organizations also do things as well, but now you're collectively doing things down in the community.
I think
that should be talked about, that this is not the first time that, you know, events like this have been happening.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, there's tons of guys on our team that have foundations or donate their time and their money to many of causes in our communities and a very diverse amount of different causes, you know, whether it's Eric Wood with pediatric cancer, myself with my ACES Foundation. I know Tyrod does a lot of great stuff, LaShawn. So it's guys all across the board that serve our communities. But it's always better when you do it collectively, right, when it's some solidarity in the matter and you're attacking, you know, three or four issues together, because now it's kind of pinpointed, precise, and when you have the power of the Buffalo Bills and that community and the NFL Shield behind you, things just seem to happen a lot quicker, a lot more rapid. More ears are on it, and more attention is paid to it. So it's just awesome to be able to work together with the organization on a lot of these issues now.
Good work Tuesday to you and your teammates, and thanks for coming in here. Sorry to bump you back.
Oh, yeah, no,
you're
good.
We'll only bump you back if we really need to. It's got to be a really big guest.
Yeah, he was. I grew up watching him. You know, I wanted to say that, but I didn't want to make him feel old.
Did you see Michael Vick here the other day?
Yeah. He's another guy, too. Yeah. I didn't get a chance to talk to him.
He probably would have bumped
you, too. Yeah, hey, it's Mike Vick. I understand. But some guys,
it's a short list.
Right.
Of people that would bump Lorenzo.
Same guys, though. Is anybody else? Is anybody else's list is growing really quickly now?
I have the list right here. Lorenzo, the lowdown every Friday. We're back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio. And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. What a show we had, by the way. What a show. Another good one. We had Mark Kelso in, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network earlier on, and Mark Kelso talked about the essential ingredient to a Buffalo Bills victory on Sunday. Here's what he said.
You have to get the Bills running game going. That's their bread and butter. I think there's a lot of play-action pass opportunities that are available here against this linebacking core in the secondary of Tampa Bay, and you're not afforded those opportunities if your running game is not successful. And I think there's ways to attack the running game. They do some things defensively. They're going to line up in fronts based on the way the Bills line up offensively, and I think the Bills can set the front that they want defensively by the way they line up and how they pre-snap move.
Mark Kelso joining us earlier on in the show. Later on in the show, Greg Cosell was with us, the executive producer, analyst for ESPN's NFL matchup. It'll be on the air tomorrow morning at 8:30 on ESPN2. Greg Cosell, talk to us about this Bills-Bucks matchup on Sunday.
Don't forget, Sean McDermott has played against this offense, for a number of years, because he was in Carolina. And this offense has not gone off against Sean McDermott's defense. Now, I think Sean McDermott had better overall players in Carolina than they do in Buffalo, but I think he has a terrific feel for it. It would not surprise me if this game plays out the way the Bills want it to play out. Now, that doesn't mean they'll win the game, because who knows? But I would expect this game not to be a real high-scoring game. I would expect it to be in the 23-20 kind of range, and I think the Bills have a real shot to win this game.
Greg Cosell, I do too, Donald Jones, as a matter of fact, and I hope it's not my normal Friday overly enthusiastic, Bills thing, but I have a feeling this is the game they break out offensively. I really do.
I think they have a shot because of this defense, how soft they play.
Yeah.
I don't think that they have the strongest defensive front. With all that being said, they still have to execute. These guys still get paid on the other side of the ball, and if this offensive line doesn't come to play and they don't execute consistently together, then you see another long day, at least, especially in the running game.
I love the fact Lorenzo mentioned it, the sense of urgency, which he's right. Sometimes after a bye, teams are kind of sleepwalking early.
You are sleepwalking.
Can't afford that.
And then you come out early, and it's like, oh, you see yourself down 14-0. It's like, oh, we got to play.
We're back. Yeah,
exactly.
Hey, I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistance from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, Shelby Rush, our producer, Jay Harris. We'll be back Monday at noon. We got the call of the game on Sunday at 1. Hope you're able to tune into that, and we'll see you. Thanks for tuning in today. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.